right. Good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon. Welcome to a special Dallas City Council meeting on Tuesday, August the 12th, where the City Council will be briefed on the proposed budget from the City Manager. As usual, we will start with our invocation and a Pledge of Allegiance. Pastor Dr. Stephen C. Nash, Sr., I always make that mistake. Come on up, Pastor Nash, is here to give us the invocation. Thank you very much. He's a native of Arizona, but we won't hold that against him because he got here to Dallas as quick as he could. He received a B.A. degree in religion and philosophy at Bishop College in Dallas, a recipient of M.A. degrees in religious education, and he holds doctorate degrees in philosophy and urban ministries and philosophy and Christian education, all from the Aspen Theological Seminary. Ordained to the work in the gospel ministry 37 years ago, Dr. Nash has actively shared his piety and ministerial gifts to the citizens of Dallas and to me as well. Prior to accepting his pastoral call to Mount Tabor, located in Dallas, he's served and he has served 19 years as pastor. Thank you for being here, and Councilman Cadane will lead us in the pledge following that. Dr. Nash.
Thank you, Brother Mayor. Would you bow with me? How we praise thee, our Father, for this another gathering of your people and the privilege to do so. We come asking your blessings upon this budget committee effort, that you would govern and guide the thinking of these our leaders as they work to develop an equitable budget, meeting the needs of the whole of Dallas. Thank you for how you brought us and how you prevail in our lives even today. And Lord, we thank you for what you are about to do. We come praying for our mayor who faces surgery in just a couple of days. And we ask that you would be with him and the physicians, that that which is done to his body will make for a speedy recovery, and he be allowed to come back to lead this city in its great way. Thank you now, Lord, for being so good to us. Continue thou to use us to your glory and honor. For we ask these things in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane, and thank you, Dr. Nash. Yes, Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to say just a word to Dr. Stephan Nash. Dr. Stephan Nash is a tremendous, tremendous force in this community for good. But I am particularly pleased. He's always been very supportive of me and my efforts, but I'm especially pleased to commend Dr. Nash now for the work that he did many years ago when Paul Quinn College was in danger of closing. We had to raise a tremendous amount of money in a very, very short time. I went to Dr. Nash, who at that time did not know me very well, but I went to him in faith and asked him for assistance. And Dr. Nash put in seed money, a large amount of seed money, and lent his name to the campaign for that fundraising effort, and enabled us to keep the doors open at a time that, had he not stepped up, I suspect the doors would have closed. Dr. Nash, I've thanked you in private for that, but I've never had an opportunity like this to say thank you in public for that and for all the work that you do. Thank you. May God bless you and keep you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Judge. So welcome to this afternoon's budget workshop. We have had a lot of discussion privately, had a few discussions publicly, and the city manager has done his work, so we look forward to your briefing. Mr. Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mayor. And Council, technically, we are here to receive the city manager's proposed budget. I'd like, though, that it might be received a little differently. The fact is that we had done a lot of work to make sure that we received information from you as a council and the public. We had seven council briefings, had 10 committee briefings, had two public hearings, had a Talk Dallas website in which we got comments from throughout the city with regards to this budget. And so upon hearing all that information, we have put together a budget which we believe will be improving the vitality of our neighborhoods, maintaining momentum in public safety, and also restoring key services where possible. It's with that that we present this to you, and hopefully you will receive it as really a reflection of your thoughts as much as it is ours. Gene, will you please give the presentation?
Good afternoon. Let's see. So first, I just want to start with a quick summary of the budget. This year's budget is fiscally responsible, continues restoring services and positions to continue growth. The balanced budget is approximately $2.81 billion. There are no service reductions, so we're continuing all of the current year services, plus, as you know, some of our services will be enhanced or expanded for the upcoming year. The property tax rate remains the same at 79.7 cents per $100 of valuation. Approximately 3.5% increase in retail water and sewer revenues, and an increase in the monthly sanitation, residential garbage, recycling, and brush and bulky pickup by 67 cents per month. So looking at some of the economic indicators, the employment rate in Dallas is growing faster than the state of Texas. We have seen good growth in our property tax base values, particularly in the commercial portion of the tax base. And we also continue to expect growth in our sales tax revenues next year as well. So I have a slide that you've seen before that I've been able to update with the final certified values of the property tax base. So we have now exceeded our peak back from fiscal year 09 and are at $93 billion worth of value. Then also looking at the portion of the growth in the tax base attributable to new construction, and this is new construction as determined by the appraisal districts, so about $1.6 billion worth of growth is new construction, so value that wasn't on the tax roll last year. And our sales tax revenue, we continue to have positive results with sales tax and are forecasting approximately 4.3% growth over the current year's estimate. And then looking at the construction or the composition of the budget, so the total budget is comprised of both an operating, day-to-day operations and maintenance of the city, as well as the capital budget, which pays for the long-term projects, the bond programs, water utility improvements. And then within each of those, we have both a general fund or general purpose as well as an enterprise component and the debt service for the general obligation debt as well. And then looking graphically at the different percentages of the total budget, how it allocates out, of course, the general fund and the water utilities fund are the biggest components of those. Then also have a chart just showing in strictly dollars and percentages the change from the current year to the proposed year. And then drilling down further into the general fund, this revenue chart, we've seen it before, continuing to see most of our general fund revenue derived from property tax and sales tax and franchise revenues as well. The general fund expenses by key focus area are also included and have additional charts in the remainder of the briefing that give more detail on the general fund. And you can also see the history of the key focus areas allocation in the general fund, so able to make a slight reduction in public safety and increasing all but the eGov key focus area for the upcoming fiscal year. And then another pie chart looks at the allocation of the expenditures within the general fund by department, with police and fire being the majority, public safety being the majority of the general fund. And then another chart included is the dollars of the various general fund departments. These are in highest to lowest dollar order and the percent change and dollar change for the upcoming year. Then this next slide is a graphical representation of what's going on with the budget. We had revenue increases from property tax and sales tax, but then we also had to allocate those amounts to ongoing commitments. We had the meet and confer program with the police and firefighters, our TIF expense, which is kind of right off the top of our property taxes. Growth in the tax base was also in the TIFs, and the city's committed to providing a portion of the TIF revenue back to those TIFs. Some other one-time revenues and reduction in court revenues, kind of all of those taken out of those revenue increases leaves very little for any additional commitments that the city might want to add to. And then another way to look at the budget, the ups and downs, ins and outs on the revenue and expenditure side, is this chart that we've shown a couple times before. This waterfall chart starting on the left-hand side, revenues showing increases in property tax, sales tax, our one-time revenue reductions, brings you towards that navy blue line in the middle. And then working from the right-hand side, you have your expenditure changes. Red are expenditure increases, and greens are expenditure reductions for a very summarized level for the general fund. So now I'll talk about some of the program specifics for the general fund, starting first with public safety. Again, the meet and confer agreement not only provides for step increases for the police officers and firefighters, but it also included an across-the-board pay increase, which was triggered based on the amount of growth in the tax base. So the growth in the tax base exceeded the trigger, so the full 4% across the board will go into effect on April 1st for police and fire sworn staff. We are planning to implement the use of technology and additional equipment, the addition of public service officers within the police department, which will help offset the need to hire additional police officers, adding cameras and license plate readers. Those technology enhancements will be expanded to 9 more of our tag areas, bringing us up to 20 of them with that technology. We would hire 165 police officers, reassign 37 officers who are currently on desk duty, hire 20 public service officers to perform some of the work performed by police officers that could be done by a civilian, as well as we looked at our life cycle on our squad cars and found that if we took the Impalas out of the fleet and focused on the Chargers, which have a good maintenance record, we could increase the interval to replace those from 100,000 miles to 110,000 miles. So that gives us the ability to reduce the Mark Squad replacement purchase next year to 137 cars. In the fire department, we are recommending the expansion of the mobile community health care program, working with area hospitals in order to help them implement their Affordable Care Act requirements. So while we're extending this program, it also brings revenue to the city in doing so. We are hiring more fire recruits over the expected attrition, and we had more attrition in the past 2 years and need to make up for that to help control some of our overtime costs, continuing our paramedic training for firefighters, and then also using our master lease program to pay for the replacement of firefighting apparatus, engines and trucks, ambulances that have exceeded their useful life. In economic vibrancy, we are dedicating additional funding for the partial reconstruction of major thoroughfares. Also, leveraging two grants that the city has received from TxDOT to work on our transportation signal system, the system as a whole, as well as addressing improvements to the traffic signals at 11 high accident intersections. Also establishing a Department of Planning and Neighborhood Vitality. This department consolidates our planning and design functions, will help us to support and create vibrant neighborhoods and make Dallas more livable. In the building inspection department, we're dedicating some of our positions to provide a concierge-type service for Grow South projects to help expedite those projects and get them moving. We recommend doubling the funds allocated towards the Earned Income Tax Credit Program, helping our low-income citizens file for that credit on their income tax return each year. We have a number of projects within the Trinity River Corridor that are coming online or online this year, such as the Trinity Skyline Trail, the Pavajo Wetlands, Cedar Crest Bridge, those various projects require operation and maintenance costs as well. And continuing our investment in Fair Park of $2 million as we did in the current fiscal year. In clean, healthy environment, meeting our commitment to PetSmart, funding the adoption center that's up in North Dallas, as well as making sure we have funds available for medical, cleaning, and food supplies out at the animal shelter. The single-use bag ordinance goes into effect in January, so enforcement on that ordinance will begin. An increase in demolition for blighted structures and an increase for the senior medical transportation service that takes our seniors to their doctor's appointments, and also additional funding for the bridge as well. And then, as I mentioned earlier, an increase in the monthly residential garbage and recycling fee. In culture, arts, and recreation, we are going to initiate our two-year plan to restore hours to the library. So as a phased-in approach, we would look to add additional hours at 12 branches in the central library throughout the upcoming year, some in six in January and six in April. And that actually puts us at more hours than we had in our system back in our peak year, adding a little bit to our materials budget. And then looking forward to 15-16, the plan would be to add six more hours at the remaining 15 branches. And I have a map that shows which branches are adding hours and what days they're adding. And then there in the appendix is a detail by branch what days they will be open, which hours. For our cultural contracts, adding some funding for cultural organizations, as well as putting back some funding for maintenance of our public art that we haven't done in a while. Additionally, the contracts for the Music Hall at Fair Park and Salmon Center didn't include utility payments, which some of our other cultural contracts did, so putting them all on the same level playing ground. And then also expanding recreation center hours, adding almost 7,300 hours at rec centers, 24 rec centers, various programs and fitness center hours and more classes. And then the next page is a map of the rec centers that are adding hours. And then finally, in our E3 government key focus area, we've grouped our technology initiatives here, adding a case management system to keep track of all the code activities and in various addresses across the city. Our fire inspection system needs streamlining, as well as we want to work on our efforts related to big data. And then our 311 call center provides additional enhancements for the callers, wait times and callbacks, as you see with other automated system. We do have a few positions added to some of the e-government departments to help address internal controls, increase workload, things to that effect. Looking at our employee compensation and benefits, we have the meet and confer agreement for the sworn employees, which includes their steps as well as the across-the-board pay raise. And then for our civilian employees, the budget includes the full-year funding incremental cost of this year's merits, as well as adding an average merit of 3%. That would be effective January 1st of 2015. And then our third year of our implementation of a total compensation study, looking at those positions where our employees are paid below kind of the current average market rates. Also looking to provide some subsidies for those employees who purchase DART passes. Initiating our employee training program, and then looking at the health benefit costs. The employee-only and the employee-plus children coverage would remain the same, the premiums for the employees. However, pre-65 retirees and spouse coverage would go up by $25 a month, effective in January. And then also, in order to comply with the Affordable Care Act, we will have to make some changes on the 70-30 plan as well. Looking at Dallas Water Utilities, operating and capital budget of over $900 million is 34% of the city's total budget. So the residential monthly bill on average would increase about $1.15 a month from $61.37 to $62.52. And most of our customers, 86% or so, would see an increase of $2.03 a month or less. And then our wholesale revenues would increase by about 2.2%. We always like to include some comparative information about how the city's water rates and our average usage compares to other cities that surround Dallas. So we're kind of always in the lower third of that chart, and you can see where our current rates are as well as the proposed rates. We also included some information on some of our index cities as well, and we're kind of in the middle to the lower third of that one as well. And then finally, this chart shows you the rate increase for the various usage classes within the residential rates. So the you can see the top three categories include the 86% of customers. And then moving on to the capital budget. Again, this is for our long-term infrastructure improvements, streets, parks, flood protection. primarily issue bonds for the general purpose portion, and then and water and sewer also issues bonds and cash funds some of their projects as well. We have some large projects coming up in the next year, and have them listed here, and all of the projects are listed in the capital budget document. We have added some cash funding to the general purpose capital budget using some funds from the general capital reserve, which is the result of land sales. to dedicate towards the partial reconstruction of our streets and some major maintenance at city facilities. The enterprise funds also use cash to pay for some of their major maintenance and facility improvement projects. They also have a pie chart on the capital budget showing, as you can see, the majority or a large portion of it are the water utilities projects. And looking at our debt service for the general obligation debt, it's approximately $230 million with 1.55 billion projected outstanding at the end of this fiscal year. We are planning a $350 million bond issuance this November, which will retire outstanding commercial paper that has already been issued for projects that we have been working on in the past year. And again, we have our projections of our future bond issues. And then we've also included our long-range outlook of approximately $1 billion into the future. The chart on slide 43, you've seen this before, and just provides an outlook on our existing debt, our already authorized future bond issues, as well as what the next bond program or pay-as-you-go program might look like. Now, I just want to talk briefly about the state taxation law requirements, also known as truth in taxation. We'll have a more detailed briefing for you next Wednesday with an action item, but just a quick overview. The state law requires that we provide notice of these calculations, and depending on how high the rate would be set, the taxpayers could vote to limit the tax increase. So we make a calculation of an effective rate, which is the tax rate that would generate the same amount of revenues on properties that are taxed in both the current year and the proposed year. So the effective rate for 14-15 is calculated at 76.01 cents. So adopting a rate of 76.01 would require us to reduce $33.5 million out of the general fund budget. Additionally, the rollback rate is the rate of adding the general fund portion of the effective rate plus 8% plus whatever is necessary for debt service. That's calculated at 80.06 cents, and that adopting that rate would increase tax revenue by $3.3 million. So the proposed rate is above the effective or the rollback rate. So in order to kind of reserve the option to adopt a tax rate over the effective rate, the City Council needs to take some specific actions, including holding a record vote and publishing and holding two public hearings, as well as publishing a notice of the date and time to adopt the tax rate. And the tax rate is scheduled to be adopted on the 17th of September. And then, so our schedule for the remainder of the budget process would begin tonight with town hall meetings, which there are 9 meetings tonight. And then we'll continue with budget workshops over the next few weeks. We also have a budget public hearing on August the 27th, the first reading of the budget ordinance on September the 3rd, as well as the tax rate public hearing if the council calls that hearing. Additionally, the second public hearing would be on September the 9th, and then scheduled to adopt the budget, the tax rate, and all the associated ordinances on September 17th, and the new fiscal year begins on October 1st. At this point in the presentation, Craig Kitten, City Auditor, provides comments on the revenues.
Thank you, Gene. Craig Kenton, the City Auditor. The City Auditor's Office is required by Council resolution to review the revenue estimates that go into the adoption of this budget. We've begun our field work. We review the methodology, the reasonableness of the methodology and the assumptions, and we verify the calculations. We're in the process of conducting our field work. We appreciate the cooperation we've received from management in responding to our information request, and we expect to have our work completed prior to the adoption of the budget. Thank you.
So the next slide is a handout, which we should be giving to each of you, that just asks you to provide your priority for briefings you wish to hear at the upcoming budget workshops. And if you would please turn those in to Mr. Gonzalez by Friday, we would appreciate it. And then finally, the budget is on the city's website, along with this presentation and our town hall schedule and additional information related to the budget. And then I'll conclude here so that you may ask questions.
Thank you. We'll I'll entertain questions at this point. It'd be great if we could keep comments and questions to, 10 minutes or so, first round, and then we could come back. So just be cognizant that everybody has a long list as well as you. So we'll try to move through this as quickly as we can. Thank you for everybody being up there so we don't call you up one at a time. First of all, we'll have Mayor Pro Tem Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, AC, for the balanced budget. If you go to page 24, and I just want to talk about if someone can just kind of walk me through the concierge service at the building inspection, Growth South project. You going to hire someone there, or what are you going to do? I mean, we do need it over there at the building inspection, but also we still need to speed it up how we do permits also. So are we adding more personnel at the building inspection? So how many, and what are we going? What are we doing?
Go ahead, Teresa.
Is this on? No? Hello? Yes. Yes, sir, we are. We wanted to dedicate a couple of people specifically for the Grow South projects. A lot of times those are small business entrepreneurs, restaurants, those types of things that may not have some of the experience and the practical knowledge that some of the larger...
Are you on?
Turn up, Joe.
No.
How about now? Oh, that's... Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. So we did want to dedicate a couple people specifically to the Grow South initiative because we know a lot of our businesses and entrepreneurs in the southern sector try to do these things themselves. They're small mom-and-pop operations. Sometimes they don't have the high-dollar consultants, engineering firms. So we didn't want to use brand-new people. We're taking a couple of our existing staff that are well-seasoned in the BI permits, know the right questions to ask, understand when people come in and they look confused that they might need some additional help. We're going to dedicate two people specifically for that.
Okay, thank you. Also, on the continued, the $2 million investment in Trout Park area, will someone explain what the $2 million is going to be for?
Councilman, we've got the $2 million is split up into sort of between two city departments, Park and Recreation and Public Works. We have 1.25 of the $2 million that we're responsible for. That money will be spent on continuing a vigorous social media program and campaign that we initiated the current year. It will include another full year of funding for operation of the 14 fountains at Fair Park. It will include phase two of a building and tree light program that we started last year, the current year. We'll be implementing a severely needed wayfinding signage program to get visitors to Fair Park to the right gate, to the right parking lot, and into the right area of the park. And just as importantly, to get visitors, for example, if they're coming out of a Cotton Bowl game in the evening, as we've recently had with soccer, to get them back to their car. We have that as an ongoing issue that we have to address. So that's a wayfinding signage program. That's about $350,000. We also want to repeat our signature event that we had this year with Fair Park Sparks on June the 13th. That was tremendously successful. Here's an aerial photograph of Fair Park during the Sparks event. So we want to repeat that again. And then finally, we want to really ramp up and get into daytime weekday programming at Fair Park, so we have some of the money in there that will allow us to attract visitors to Fair Park from the neighborhood and the city for weekday programming targeting Monday through Friday.
Okay, and also, I guess on page 31, I guess the 31, thanks. Okay, AC, I guess this is a question for you, and I'm just trying to find out how do we look at this. You stated that we had like $55 million of new property tax and sale tax coming into the city of Dallas, and just a chart up there, I'm trying to find out which page was on. It showed like a bowl with $55 million going to different departments. You know what page that on?
Slide 18.
18.
18, right. Okay. First, on declining court revenue, AC, are we doing anything different because we got a whole lot of money we have not been collected? This $1.6 million is the money we have not been able to collect, or that's new revenue?
It's a combination, and we've been doing a lot of things differently. However, we still see overall issue tickets declining. We have seen some improvement or increases, I should say, with regards to the amount collected once a ticket is issued. But overall, it has been declining over the last several years.
Okay. With meet and confer, and we look at this, and I keep going back and forth. When we sign a meet and confer, I look like that it's $24.3 million that is going to come out of the $55 million commitment, which is probably almost half that amount, less than half that amount. When we signed meet and confer many, many years ago, we still negotiate this every 3 years. Could I see AC hopefully, going forward, maybe a three-year projection, what it's costing us? Because when we first did this, it said it's not going to cost the taxpayer any money for the first time, but each year it is costing us money each year to do going forward. So is there a way you can forecast that out going? Because I know we forecast the revenue based on the property tax going up, and that's how we negotiate, I mean, confer. But it's a way that you can forecast to us and to the citizen to know that what is the cost each year going out, like a three-year forecast.
Yes,
I mean, because everybody said we got $55 million, and the first thing you see is $24 million that, going toward meet and confer.
Yes, sir. The time when we presented the meet and confer contract for the council consideration, we included a forecast for the what it was going to do to the budget over the 3 years of that contract. The assumptions that we had, in fact, I think, is this the off of that presentation that was in there that forecasted the dollars that would be increased. Now, the thing that we did not know that was subject to just the economy was how much of the cost of living was going to impact on our budgets. We were fortunate that the economy had been growing as well as it has, and so the entire 4% that was included in the contract is being going to be compensated this fiscal year. That was a question, but that question has now been answered.
Okay, and page, got two more. Page 32. Page 32. No, go to page 33. I missed the wrong one then. But anyway, on the rec center, I guess this Willis. On the rec center that we look at, Tom Allen Rec Center got 55 hours. How do you determine the hours for each rec center? And I thought Tom Allen was a very, very busy rec center. I'm trying to find out why did they not go up 6 hours and stay at 55?
Basically, our criteria is usage, current usage of the rec center, daily traffic, and geographic distribution. So we looked at our busiest rec centers, and that's where we tended to add the 5 hours, but we also were very careful to distribute them equitably around the city.
So do you have an evaluation sheet of paper to show how you did that? I mean, I would love to have something there because if my resident asks me why I told me I didn't get 6 out of 55, I would love to have some say, this is how we did the evaluation.
Yeah, I'll be glad to sit down with you and go through that determination.
Okay, I got a town hall meeting there on Thursday.
Okay, yeah,
so
we'll do that.
I'll make sure, you know, when they ask me about the hours.
Yeah.
I guess the library, I know we got a new library that's going to be opened up at Highland Hills on September the 20th at 10 a.m. I know we got more money funded towards the library, and I know Highland Hill will be the new library. It's not on the Monday through Sunday open. What is the criteria going to be that this year is probably not going to be 7 days, but the following next year, what will we do going forward to address libraries, which will be open 7 days a week?
Right. We're similarly to what Willis
said. Is your mic open? Oh.
Maybe I need to get it closer.
Yeah, right.
Similarly to what Willis said, we used the same criteria. We looked at hours of usage, material circulated. So we took our high-use locations and increased the hours there first and distributed geographically across the city. But we will be keeping a close eye on it so we can make adjustments.
And what I would love to do that, I know AC, the library is under you, Willis, the rest is under you. But when we do those evaluation, mm-hmm. I would love to have something we can give to the citizen and say, hey, you need to use the library, you want more hours, just how you measure this. But if people don't know, if you don't use the library, it's not going to be open those extra hours of the rec center. But it should be a metric. AC should be something that we have that people can go to, especially the citizen go to and say, what's the traffic count, you know, monitor versus the other library or versus the other rec center? Because first thing I'm going to say, why is this rec center open versus this rec center open? And I don't have nothing to show for the rec center to be open.
We collect those statistics and are happy to share them with you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. With that, Mayor, I think that's all on the brief line.
Thank you. Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can someone go to page 22, please? What is the explain the community health care program under public safety once again?
Would you speak in?
Explain the community health care program under public safety. What is that again?
Okay. That is the program by which we are changing our emergency response on EMS mm-hmm. to one of not just response but also proactive work in the community to see what is going on with our frequent flyers and others that are facing numerous medical changes mm-hmm. or challenges rather mm-hmm. and to see how we can change that situation where we can improve their life in a way that they're not responding or having to call for us for help.
So will someone be out? Will that be out in the community? Will there be some information? So when we have our budget town hall meeting tonight, how will that, who will be explaining that? Is that further?
We will have someone from the fire department who will explain how this, it's really a community paramedic mm-hmm. who is going out. They'll be sent out in teams to see about helping people face various challenges.
Okay. And will it be like located somewhere, or it just be?
Well, they're going to be responding from fire stations, much like the others.
Okay then. Fair Park, AC. Some of the things that we still have. Anyone did a Mr. Willis a need assessment at Fair Park? Did we finish that need assessment?
Yes, ma'am. We do have a needs inventory. I'll be glad to share that with you.
On that, and please do into the full council as well. Will some of those need assessment go on the, or will they be recommended for the 2017 bond program?
That will be the determination of the Park Board and City Council. But we'll certainly, in past bond programs, there has been an allocation for Fair Park in 2006. I think it was $72 million, which was the highest amount ever. So we'll certainly come to you with a recommendation for that.
Okay. And let me see it ASAP, because I just want to see, do you have buildings that need to be repaired as a part of the need assessment?
Yes, ma'am. The needs assessment and inventory at Fair Park is substantial.
Okay.
Including building restoration, art restoration, grounds maintenance, putting parks, green space back into Fair Park, and things like that.
Okay. Have we come up with a solution on trying to get all this stuff taken care of so we won't keep piecemealing it year by year, year by year? Can we come up with something that can work for the next bond?
We can certainly do that and come to you with a recommendation.
Then the on page... and see, on the property tax, I saw the letter where property tax went up to some degree. How do the forecasts look for the upcoming year for our property tax here in the city?
The property tax rate stayed the same, but property tax revenues grew because our values are more. We have some... I think we would have to classify them as more hopes than anything else at this point in terms of the following fiscal year. From the materials that we've been reading, it suggests that it may stay at a similar pace, but it's really way too early for us to know how that would be following in the next year after our following fiscal year.
Okay. Tonight at our town hall meetings, did we get a list of who's going to be the individual from your staff at each town hall meeting?
Yes, ma'am. One of the staff people can give you that.
Okay. I need that. Now, is this the budget that they're going to be presenting tonight?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then what do you want the citizen to get out of this particular budget? What do you want them to take from it?
Well, I think the overall is that I would hope that they would receive it that this budget is one that is accomplishing the things that I set out when I started this conversation in terms of what we're trying to do to maintain our momentum and increase vitality in the neighborhoods, et cetera. But also get some more information about what are the challenges that we have, even in a economic good time, to still balance the budget and to hopefully hear that we're trying to do the best to balance all of our needs that we have throughout the city.
And then, Gene, and this is my last question, Mr. Mayor. And on animal service, Gene, what are we going to do? Do we have a lot in animal service? Because I didn't hear too much about animal service.
So we will be funding from the general fund the animal adoption center that's located at the PetSmart in North Dallas, as well as increasing our funding for medical, cleaning, and food supplies.
So are those only two things we're adding?
Those are the ads you're seeing, as well as we're working this year to address some of the one-time related issues at the shelter, maintenance that needs to be done at the shelter as well.
All righty. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you very much, Mayor. AC, you've done a very good job with this budget. This has probably been one of the quietest times of discussing the budget that this council has been faced with. Even though we still have a long way to go, you've done a great job.
Thank you.
Some of my concerns, and one of my most major concerns, and let me just start and back them up till I get up to my major concerns. As related to the dogs, I think we need to still do more than just adopt them, because the stray dogs is running loose in my area. They're unadoptable. I mean, these are dogs with problems, and they are not the types of dogs that you just have as pets in the home. When you look at the type of dogs that these are, they do need help, but we need to also make sure we have some funding for retrieving these certain types of bad stray dogs that our police sees every day, our code sees every day, the mailman sees every day, and everyone. It's a different breed of stray dogs that have over-connected with one another to where you can't even tell what breed the dog is, okay? And so that is what I'm talking about, the dogs. It's not your everyday pet. But all dogs are pets. But these dogs need to be collected off the street. And there needs to be some type of focus and funding to pick up those types of stray animals and get them a home somewhere, but to do something with those dogs. I want to know a little bit about Project Reconnect. What are we doing with Project Reconnect, the reentry program? Is there money in this particular budget for that? Or we certainly cannot just let that stand by the side. So what are we doing with reconnecting with those that I talk about all the time that are getting out, the 600 that are being released every month to Dallas? What are we doing with Project Reconnect?
I'm going to ask Teresa or Bernadette to help with that answer.
That's good. All right. Somebody. What are we doing?
We are busily reestablishing our relationships with all the partners, including DOORS, who is the primary umbrella organization that's been helping us out, Safer Dallas, Better Dallas, EPIC, also reaching out to the county, who has been a long-term partner with us. DPD is part of that group as well. And so as we reestablish those partnerships, we are reestablishing who's handling what, in particular job training and job placement.
So what does that mean when we say we're reconnecting, reestablishing? That means we're sitting still and are not doing anything.
In fact, we are still helping the homeless population, which does have a predominantly large group of ex-offenders. And so those are still going through the bridge. Those are still getting placed in housing and still receiving wraparound services from caseworkers.
And since you mentioned housing, what part of housing are they being readmitted to in my district that I just found out about?
There are both scattered site situations and project-based sites. Okay. And some of those grants you'll see coming forward actually tomorrow, and that's through the Continuum of Care grants. And those are housing placement vouchers to place into those units. We also have an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, with DHA, mm-hmm. the Dallas Housing Authority, to also place within their units.
So how many are we placed, have we placed, do we have that we're placed?
I'll have to get you a number that's
ballpark.
Exact to the...
Just ballpark. I don't need it. Just ballpark.
Several hundred.
All right. And several hundred... And how many of them are in my district of the 700?
I'll have to get that for you, sir.
A ballpark.
Again, I'll have to get that for you.
How many are in Village Oaks apartments?
Village Oaks did have 70. Those are in the process.
70 of the couple of hundred that we have, Mayor, that's in my district.
70 with
project. That I knew nothing about until I went over there to find out the fact that I am housing 70 in just one area, and Chief, you know it is a problem area at Village Oaks, okay? And where we, the city, put 70 into my district. I know nothing about it. It's okay. Let's get it all together. But we're going to talk transparency. I want to know because I know where the problems are, but we want to do something about it. So I do have some numbers. All right. Thank you, Brent. That was just so nice of you. Let me know that. Libraries. Are we still, when I was growing up, and I would go downtown to the library, we would have we would pay library fines, they see, for our late books that we would turn in. Are we still paying the late fees and charging late fees at the library?
Yes, sir. We still have fines and fees if you do not return your items.
Okay. How are we doing on collection of that?
We don't have a collection service.
Okay.
We did in the past. We collect when people come back now.
Because here's where I want to drive us to. AC, we've done a great job. We've had budgets, Mayor, where we started out $33 million in the hole. And to know that we're not starting at this particular point, that says now, AC, from a management perspective, in my opinion, if you hold the line on where we are, then this next council and the next budget, we shouldn't be $13 million from the beginning. We should maybe be almost flat, or $2 or $3 million if we just didn't have a smooth sailing. So, but with that, I think that the focus should be toward how we can find new revenue, and we need to find the new revenue now. So we need to do better collections, even at the library. So when the librarian folks come back, y'all figure out how we're going to get some more money. As we still be supportive of the library, let's see how the library can collect more fines. The same with the court. I'll segue into that to move over to Fair Park. Fair Park. Well, before I go to Fair Park, let me go to this other one. Small businesses. And Teresa, you can help handle this one. The biggest complaint, and you all have addressed it, and I have faith that Teresa AC and everybody involved with that over on Jefferson will speed up the pace. Small businesses, they do not operate, nor do they have the resources to operate like Walmart operates and other big corporations. These folks, they don't, some of the folks that are in business, they don't even have the business plan. And because they don't have the business plan that's written out like the major corporation, does not mean that they cannot do business. If you look at all of the small businesses that are throughout our community and throughout the city, they don't have all of the wherewithal, but they do have enough to be in business. Now, with that being said, I think when we go over on Jefferson, and when they go to Jefferson, granted, you all are going to be customer-friendly, and we're going to try to assist them, but we cannot expect to just turn them back out of the door because they don't have it all fixed up and laminated and all of that like some of the big companies do. You know, they have big company budgets. They have engineers and architects where these folks come in with something that's written. I agree with you of having somebody else that will welcome them and sit with them and work through the process with those folks versus turning them away. It's not going to be the prettiest thing. So it's a part of education that we have to do. Mayor, that's the only way we're going to grow. If we're going to grow South, you got to grow with what the South is. And if the South is like this, we've got to figure out how we're going to do the tedious paperwork and education to push them through the process. They may not have all of the fees that the big corporations have, but we must take under consideration smaller businesses that are trying to get a foothold while we're out here pushing people to grow South. So that's what that with the small business. Now the Fair Park, and I'll be ready to close when I get through the Fair Park. Mayor, I know we have a review committee. When you look at, for example, the attention that we put on Clyde Warren Park, and then you look at the success of Clyde Warren Park, it's a park. We went in it, we gave it what it needed to have, then we gave it the support that it needed to have to be the great park that it is now. We must do the same thing with Fair Park. We have disregarded Fair Park, in my opinion. We're sitting and not generating the revenue that could possibly balance our budget. I personally think, Mayor and AC, that we could, and Willis, We could balance our budget if we put more concentration on just Fair Park. And then we could have other levels of conversations. If you look at how many events Jerry Jones has a year at AT&T Stadium, all types of events, well, theoretically, he have events 360 days a year. You say, well, why? Well, because, one, he's charging, what, $10 for a tour or $15 for folks to have tours every day. All right? So he has revenue being generated somehow every single day. And then if you look at the event calendar of AT&T Stadium, Willis, is about this long. If you look at our event calendar, it's about like this. Now, we're talking about the little events that we're having, and I continue to press to say, that we should be utilizing Fair Park. We should be making sure that folks understand and appreciate and have something to go to Fair Park. The Arboretum, they're doing something every single season and every single day. And they're just the Arboretum. But they do more events at the Arboretum than we do at Fair Park. And I think that it's incumbent upon our people that we have working at Fair Park to do more than sit back and wait on an event to come versus going out and being proactive, creating and finding an event. And that is the job of, that we need to have. Now, I know the review committee is doing something. We've been doing something. We need to, this budget coming up, the next one, come with a plan that will show us how we can put revenue into Fair Park. We have many empty buildings out there. The Women's Museum is gone. The Science Place is gone. The Natural History Museum is gone. We have so many buildings that are available but are gone. But the question I like to be hearing is, what are we doing about it? Who are we talking to? Who have we tried to get in there? Who have we talked to parole to say do a parole museum plus? You got to think for some people sometimes, you know. Maybe he'll do a baby museum or something there, that, or somebody else. Who competes against the paroles? Go get somebody. Get the Hunts. Maybe they want to do something. Put the Crows. Somebody needs to do something. But no one is going to do anything unless we be proactive and we put it on the table. And one other thing, the parking contract at Fair Park, it is atrocious. Now, we are actually losing money with the parking contract at Fair Park. I like Buddy and I like Ted. But at the end of the day, when you got to pay $15 to go through the gate before you can get to the free mirrors back to school, for example, whether they charge or not, but you have free events, but then these people sitting here and they charge you $15 to come through the gate and go through the gate. And so who's going to do that when they're going to events that don't cost that much? You go to a garage sale, it's $7 to get into the event, and then it's $15 to pay the park. I mean, who's going? So there are things that we're leaving money on the table with Fair Park. What do we do to fix up the buildings? What do we do? Now, the mayor, you got a task force, and we're going to be hearing about a report. But we got to get beyond this report. Fair Park will get us out of trouble. It will get us out of trouble. We should have food trucks out there every day. Folks should be going out there every day. Folks should be taking walks through the park every day. Folks should be being greeted. Folks should be able to get souvenirs. Folks should be able to have fun. And the same thing they're doing at Six Flags. But we're not doing it. Now, I know you're going to do it. Mayor, thank you. I'm glad y'all dealt with my little tirade. And I'm going to stop. I probably still got 2 minutes left, but I'm going to save those 2 minutes and donate them to somebody else.
Thank you. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm certainly pleased to see the increased funding for our libraries and some of the asks from our animal lovers returned. And, AC, a couple of things. First off, if you could resend that email with the list of which ACMs and city staff are going to be at which town hall, that would be nice if you could resend that for me today. Thank you. I didn't see it. I know that. That's why I just politely said sometimes resend is a polite way to say we haven't gotten it yet. I was trying to start off on the right foot, guys. Now you're pushing me. We haven't gotten the... Is that what you wanted to hear? All right.
Yes, I'll resend it.
Thank you, AC. I knew you'd resend it if I asked that way. I was trying to be nice. That's out the window. I'll just be myself. So on the... Looking at this budget, one issue that I'll ask that gets briefed is I'm interested in the strategy for our back office. The support staff we have, the other executives, and the administration. Just going through the eGov Chapter 5, looking at various areas, intergovernmental services, looking at internal control task force, just looking at everything, the proposed staffing for next year is almost always greater than the estimated staffing this year. And so my concern is that we'd allow to creep in some fattening of the administrative staff at Marilla Street, and that we could be losing efficiencies. Because essentially, if we, for example, we have potholes, we can either hire people to fill the potholes, or we can have people in the back office counting the potholes. And so whenever we spend money in the back office, we don't have the money to go out into the field. And just going through the eGov section particularly, in each of these areas, there's a increase in staffing. And I know strategically we are going to need some areas in staffing, but I want to understand more what your plan is, because from the top, with now two additional assistant city manager level positions, or I may be wrong because I don't have an org chart yet with everyone's names on it yet, but just looking at the which would be a good to resend also, the org chart with the names, with to understand the structure and where we're going, because for me it's important to put the citizens' priorities first, and I think there's even more we can do for our libraries. And looking for places that we can get money, we need to take a hard strategic look at, do we need all these new people in the back office at Marilla Street? Do we need another person on payroll like it proposes? Another person on internal control task force? One individual now tasked essentially to be, or from what it reads, liaison between the city manager's office and the city auditor. How are all these positions going to increase the effectiveness of the government by certainly enlarging the bureaucracy and making it bigger and having more people involved and counting the potholes, if you will, rather than filling the potholes? So I'd like to hear your thoughts on the increased size of the back office staff at City Hall, because I don't want any creeping in, because in budgets past, years past, the economy gets better. We start adding people in the back office. The economy falls apart. We have to lay off just everyone. And certainly in the when you hit the bad times, your goal isn't to lay everyone off. And in the good times, the goal isn't to keep adding everyone back to a point where we're back at our height. So your thoughts, particularly going through eGov, Chapter 5, almost all of those had more proposed FTEs than the estimated. And so I want to hear your thoughts on what's the overall strategy. How does that fit into the org chart? How are we eliminating duplication? For example, we already have now we have a chief wellness officer. But I know also with our insurance company, is it Universal General, or the insurance provider provides a wellness consultant to the city. So do we have duplication there? Are we losing efficiencies? Are we just fattening the back office at Marilla? So I'm very interested in your strategic vision and why you think that we need to add all these people to back office, and why there aren't some areas where you would want to reduce the number of people at back offices or find other ways to increase efficiencies.
The overall direction, as you described it, I think is one that I'm not sure that I would agree with from the just at the outset. Number one, for the very, very most part, we are increasing where we have been increasing on those areas that are delivering services to the public. Now, there, as you were saying, back office positions that were added, most of those that we had included were for those that for the offices that the city council appoints, the city attorneys, our city auditor, city secretary. We did have some for our for our back office, as you say, but in every case was trying to look at in what addition was either going to be helping us actually recoup more money than their cost, or advance a direction that the council has been wishing us to pursue. As an example, that comptroller's the change there in the comptroller's area is one of trying to address a couple of one opportunity and one just difficulty. One is the opportunity of really digging into auditing our revenues in a variety of different areas, and the way we budgeted that particular ad was to add revenues to offset that cost. We believe that there's going to be more than that, that individual will be able to recapture through that auditing of our operations to recoup their costs. In the area of the comptroller's office that we did make a change on, the reality is that the staff has not been increased much at all during a time when Gadsby rules and other challenges that they've been having have greatly increased the scope and complexity of what they have to get accomplished in order to get a CAFR out. Now, that may not seem like it's delivering bottom-line services to the public, but I can tell you if we can't get our audit out, it has a significant impact on bond ratings and other efforts that we have to go on in order to make things possible for our community. Now, we did also add a position to help out our ethics officer. It's one person to be added to add some staff support so that we can be doing training for 13,000 of our employees on ethics. That is something that I have heard from the council is something that is important. With respect to the person that we added at an ACM level to be focused on our wellness program, I am making a strategic decision beyond what has been out there in the past, and that is that when we have $120 million spent on delivering medical benefits to our employees, 80-some-odd percent of which is something that can be prevented with better nutrition and exercise, that it is worth paying a couple hundred thousand or even more to be able to move that needle just even a little bit. Because if you do, you're going to be moving savings on the order of magnitude of millions. And it's not a duplication because we do have a consultant and we have been benefiting from that consultant. But it does not replace a day-to-day ongoing imperative that somebody's going to be having at a senior level to see about making change throughout the organization. And that investment will be returned greatly, is my belief. Now, we also had another executive to be focused on the vitality of our neighborhoods. As you are very well aware of, we've been having some issues in the area of housing with HUD and others. And to have some focus on that is something that is, as much as anything else, going to help for us to avoid problems with HUD that could cost us millions of dollars, but more importantly, be able to maybe change the way we do our business in such a way that our tax base would grow even further, as opposed to being in a situation where some of our middle-income families in particular are in neighborhoods that are on the decline. Now, this growth, in as just focused on executives, is still less than where we were at peak. We're not at peak. Overall operation, we're still almost 800, 777 less employees than we were back in 08, 09. We're still getting much of the services that we have had in the past, although there has not been the overall dollars to do some of the things that we were doing in the past. But our salaries overall have increased to keep up with inflation or to meet commitments that the council and others think appropriate. And so with all of that is the balance that we have sought to achieve here that is not about anything remotely looking like fat, but about getting things done in a smart way.
Well, thank you. And I certainly do have concerns about growing the, particularly the city manager's back office in this manner. Essentially, this council's got to make policy decisions. How do we want to allocate our limited resources? Do we want to allocate them to fill in the potholes or adding more people in the back office? And that's an important policy discussion for this council, and I'm certainly going to want to request a briefing on that. Because many of these criteria you go through this Chapter 5 with the FTEs that are being added, you routinely read cost per check dispersed increasing. You read cost of financial transaction going up. And it's because of the increased labor costs in these departments. We're adding everything from an extra person to help with agendas, getting agendas up, to other people to help get the payroll checks out. And each one of these individually, possibly they can be defended, but you look at the big picture, we're adding people everywhere. You go through the fives, you see department after department, each one, we're adding people. And so that's going to have to be, a policy discussion for this council, which direction we want to go in the future. Because what's being proposed there, then at least to hear what the strategic plan is, the vision from our city manager, what are you proposing doing? Are these increases you see, we make these this year, then these are good for 5 years? In some of these departments, we don't see the increases again? Or what are the metrics to decide that the services being offered are sufficient so we can put all of our resources into filling the potholes? Or alternatively, roll back the taxes or build up a reserve account? Because we love these good economic times, but everyone knows the market goes up and the market goes down. Hopefully we get a great run here that lasts 6-7 years. But then that council that's around 7-8 years from now, when whatever happens in the economy isn't what it is today, it has to make those tough decisions on to cut. Have we saved away a reserve fund? And we've just built up our staff so much, we would have big cuts like we did a few years ago. We lose the institutional knowledge, and it's tough for us to regain our footing. And so those are my concerns about, particularly in the eGov section, seeing all the proposals being a lot more than the estimated personnel this year. And so I would also like some charts and breakdowns, even if it doesn't come to a briefing, about how many people are in overall going to be employed, whether they are individuals in the front or are there people in the back, so we can see that and understand what the policy discussion is that we're having here on putting our limited financial resources into increasing the staff, how many years we'll have to think we'll have to do that, or after we do it this year, are we good for 5 years, and then maybe it's an investment we want to make. But if we see these numbers go up every year, it adds up to be quite a bit. A person here, 0.8 here, 5 here, adds up very quickly into millions of dollars. In fact, you know, you can easily get up to $5 million worth of payroll you're adding in the back office, which is money, too, that we could put in the libraries to make the libraries fully functional like the library advocates want. We've got issues with our parks that we could address with that money. We've got additional animal issues that could be addressed with that money. So it's how we're going to grow the organization. So this budget, I would like the discussion and the policy not to be just on what we're doing in the front, but what's going on in the back, too, because that's a significant area. So so some numbers and information you can get about that, and just some overarching on vision on what we're doing here, because my concern is that some of these may be justified, but not all of them are justified. And when you look at things, you see increase, 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 increase. I want to see more often holding the line, increasing the efficiencies through better procedures, better techniques with the staff we have, since one of our largest costs as an organization is people. So how can we just make it everything run efficiently with the people we have rather than change just being adding? Or is there an area where we can actually, through efficiencies, decrease the number of people that are in that department and put them over, create FTEs where we know we need them, whether it be libraries or filling the potholes and more people on animals. So to me, that's an important policy and strategic discussion that we need to have, and this is the right time to have it so we don't get, in the next couple of years, adding people without a goal for the back office. So I know you have a strategy on it and an org chart. I'd like to see the org chart plugged in with names for how we are now, even if we have a transitional org chart and it'll change in a couple months. For me, it's important to have those that chain of command, because now on code issues, I'm dealing with Chris Sweckert, which is fine, but it just kind of changed overnight, and some others haven't changed. And so to get that definitive org chart, and then also let that help be a discussion for what's going on in the back office and what your vision is. And because right now, just increasing everything for increasing sake, for me, is going to come down to a policy decision. And I'd rather have people fill in the potholes and count in the potholes. We know we've got a lot to do, so let's get people out there in the field interacting with citizens. The next issue I'd like to raise was on our commercial paper program. I noticed a significant jump of approximately $5 million in the commercial paper program. Historically, it's been about $8 million a year, and so I was wondering if you could speak to that increase and the reasons for the increase in the commercial paper program, the costs.
So, Mr. Griggs, that service covers our master leasing program as well as our commercial paper program, and the increase you're seeing is related to the master leasing program, and as we've ramped up that program, because we used to sell equipment notes, you've seen increases. The majority of the increase for next year is related to equipment whose purchases have already been authorized by the City Council. Of the increase, only $1.2 million is allocated towards equipment that is planned to be purchased in the upcoming fiscal year, such as fire apparatus replacement, some IT enhancements, things like that.
I'd like some details, because the program, commercial paper, is typically about $8 million in the past. Was a bit. What page is that on?
Let's see. It's going to be on page 204.
204. Typically, it stayed under the general obligation commercial paper master lease program has stayed under $8 million, and this year it's proposed at just over $13 million. And so how many – this is just for everyone listening. Describe why is purchasing a vehicle that the cost would go up so much? Are these vehicles ultimately funded by the bond program?
So there are two separate programs. The commercial paper program is associated with the implementation of the 06 and the 2012 bond program. So a portion of the cost of the service covers our bank contracts that provide liquidity for the commercial paper program. The other portion is the master leasing program, and that's principal and interest payments for repayment of equipment purchases that we've made over the past couple of years that have been included in the budget. And as we have ramped up this program, we have begun to borrow money from the bank, which is Bank of America, and drawn down on that line. So instead of borrowing the money up front, we wait until we make a payment on the purchase, and then we draw down the money from the bank. So initially, as we simply awarded a purchase for equipment, we didn't have any master lease expense. And then as the equipment was delivered, then we went ahead and made a payment to the vendor and drew down the master lease funds. So because we have not been doing this, haven't been using the master lease program for all that long, you're seeing a gradual increase year over year.
And so how big is our line of credit with Bank of America?
We're authorized to borrow approximately $25 million a year.
$25 million?
A year.
Per year?
Per year.
Per year?
Yes.
Okay, so then what's the total line of credit?
It's $25 million a year.
Just a year.
The program ends a year from now.
Okay. And then what year do we enter into the program?
I think that we're in the third year of the program. Yeah.
And it ends next year. Okay. I'll be, since we're the city of Dallas, it seems strange to go to a bank, someone like Bank of America, to borrow $25 million.
Right. We found that it's more flexible and lower interest rates than using equipment acquisition notes. We compared the costs and found it to be.
So what type of costs are forecast in this? So this, what, break down this $13 million. How much of that's commercial paper and how much is the master lease program?
Approximately $2 million is for the commercial paper program.
And so $11 million is for the master lease program?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then if you could give me some more details about this $11 million and what vehicles and when we got
sure.
them and when,
sure.
they're, when they're due, because that's something to you can get savings if we can save up money and then buy the vehicles instead of having to borrow from a bank. More of a, I know the pay-as-you-go has come up, so certain areas like this for vehicles could be a good way to go to pay-as-you-go rather than constructing, borrowing from one bank and using a master lease program to pay it back, since we got borrowing costs involved in that. I'd be interested, too, to how much money, if we had just paid cash for these vehicles, we would save versus the cost of these.
Yeah. And part of it is the timing of the cash out the door, mm-hmm. Because when we would, if we cash funded something, you have to have the cash up front, and we're not matching the payment of the costs along with the maturity of the asset. So.
I see, but I mean, but yeah, but that matters about the assets, but really if they, we can't really amortize them since we're the city of Dallas and we don't pay taxes to other people, so it's got...
Right, we don't pay taxes, but we do record the depreciation on the assets.
I realize we record it, but it doesn't have the same benefit as for a business recording depreciation when you're the city of Dallas. So I'd like that to be part of the policy discussion that comes up if we are going to transition to a pay-as-you-go program. One area probably to go pay-as-you-go would be for some vehicles rather than borrowing and depreciating something that doesn't do any good on our tax returns since we don't file one. I'd look at some improvements there. And also I'm interested in this budget if we can start talking about putting some money aside for when the bad times do come. Even a few million this year, start making a commitment and build it up, because we know there's going to be a budget 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now. That's going to take we're going to have a $50 to $100 million shortfall, and I know what happens when that goes on. The first thing that gets hit, libraries, parks, rec centers, the arts, animals, they're the first things to get cut. So I would like to start to see us making some contingency plans so we don't have to go through what we just did as the city of Dallas, and particularly I know those people on here from the class of 07 went through it even more than I did. And so I think that would be a good policy discussion for us to have, too. Pay-as-you-go, are we going to start saving some of this money, putting even some of it aside this year, showing some fiscal discipline to build up a fund for when next time when the economy does make a correction that we're prepared for and we don't have to virtually eliminate all the quality of life services here in the city of Dallas. I'm interested in that. I'm still very interested in getting the citizen priorities taken care of and looking at if we can really squeeze down the back office personnel and get to a place where we can have a very lean and efficient back office. Try to leverage technology to reach the same outcomes rather than just adding more personnel hoping for a better outcome and hoping that the budget continually increases every year because of increased property values. So those are the things I'll be looking at, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Ms. Gates.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Um,
I want to start off by saying, first, thanks AC and your staff for preparing this budget. It's and all the briefings that have led up to it. I think there's a lot to go through, but it's all laid out there and all the information's there. And thank you, Gene, for sitting with me and answering specific questions. I still haven't made through all 500 and what is it, 541 pages, so the questions may still keep coming. I want to start with my initial reaction. I mean, I know our spending, and I won't repeat some of the things Mr. Griggs has said, but, you know, our spending's up 4%. And the assumption when your spending's up is that you should be getting more better services or we're putting money to work for our citizens. And I just don't think we should ever take our mind off the fact that we're spending people's good, hard-earned dollars. And I don't think they mind paying them if they're getting the services that they expect from us at the city. And sometimes we let them down. So if we're gonna require them, essentially they're going to be paying us more money now because the values of their homes have gone up. And if we're going to be not looking at rolling the tax back to the effective rate, which, I mean, I know that would require, I think it was a $33 million cut in the budget, and this budget's proposed not to do that. So I want to make sure that we're spending the money wisely and they're getting the bang for their buck. And let's start with public. Well, I think page 18 in the slide presentation is a good slide because it kind of gives us really why we can't, that some of these dollars, this new revenues are already spent. But on the non-recurring revenues, that $17 million, what was that including, Gene? Like, why do we lose those revenues?
A big portion of it was related to a one-time payment we received from Medicaid for prior year ambulance billings, and then some of the smaller portions were related to our general capital reserve or land sale revenues, which we actually moved to the capital budget to cash fund some capital projects for next year, as well as the payment in lieu of taxes went down a little bit. So those are the majority of it.
So essentially, this slide shows that ACU didn't have a lot of new money to deal with. Some of it was kind of previously allocated, and so there was some shifting within the budget. And when you look at different areas, and I think the best way is when you look at the departments, you can kind of see what departments receive more money. And there's areas, and I think Scott addressed this a little bit, was you're spending money because in certain areas, and you're telling us that we're going to, one day it's going to save us money, you know, be the new ambulance, the community, which I'm totally in favor of. It's going to cost us a little bit more, but maybe we will be able to have, you know, better allocated.
If I might quickly add to that, as an example of that, we put in money for it, but we also put in revenue for it.
Right.
Some of these ads were immediately followed up with, okay, can we make it back in revenue? And so it was actually neutral, even though it was showing as an increase.
That's helpful. And I think we've talked about the master agreements, the lease agreements, that you think one day that'll actually save us money. So when we do, I think it's helpful for me if you'd highlight where you see those revenues coming back, and then periodically if we get updates that, look, we spent more, but look where we've saved. Because I feel like we justify expenses because we're told it's going to save us money down the road, but then when we go down the road, it's hard to show where we save money. And I've only been doing this a year, but I just want a better accounting for that when we've made those choices that we actually see the money saved or we stop spending the money in those areas.
We're also working to be more clear about in our performance measurements,
right,
to tie those budget commitments or investments, if you will, to see performance, and so that we would be reporting back on that.
Okay, thanks. All right, with regards to public safety, and I know there's been a lot of talk that we're cutting, and essentially we're not really cutting. We're just making some. I know DPD's up $10 million. I think the fire department's up. I can't find that number right now, but their general budget is up. So we are. They're up $11 million. I'm sorry. Fire's up about $8.9 million, and police is up about $11 million. If you look at their departments. And so you're just kind of shifting resources. But there's been a lot of talk about how many police officers we have per thousand. What is this going to do to that ratio?
The not fully funding the attrition, and I'm
2.7. We go from 2.77 per thousand currently to the proposed 2.72 per thousand.
So it's not a big change.
Not at all.
But we are below that.
I just want to remind you that that 3 per thousand discussion is always misrepresented. There is a flexibility in that 3 per thousand direction that if you use alternative programs to have the same result of reduced crime, that you have met that standard of 3 per thousand as well through those other programs, which we're including technology and our 20 civilians that we're adding.
Okay.
And I want to underscore that second part that he just said and make a distinction. We're adding 20 PSOs, public safety officers, as opposed to civilians, because I know that there was this concern, if the budget starts getting tight, we knock out civilians. And unfortunately, the history suggests that is certainly a threat. I wanted to be very clear that when we were putting in civilians who would be serving in the functions that were being done by police officers, that we actually give them a different title, have them in a uniform that is, you know, different from the other civilians, and that we, I would make the argument, actually is really part of that, should be part of that count, so that in the case of we're losing 35 for attrition, and but we're replacing with 20 civilians, it's really reduction of 15. And so with that really being very careful about wanting to make sure that they're doing and that's what they would be staying on doing, that that's be counted that way.
Well, and thank you, Chief, for your response, because I know there's different ways we can, you know, fight crime. And I think it's obviously having patrol officers is extremely important, and they're
yes.
the face in the community. But we can do it through, you know, neighborhood vitality, which we're doing. We could do it through activities for our youth that they're involved in rec centers and libraries, and they're not out there committing crime. So we have to be spending money in different areas. But I just, for you, it's just a challenge to the chief that we continue to, you know, spend your budget kind of wisely and where you think it's going to be most effective, and because we don't want to see crime go up.
No, we don't.
it's our number one priority, I think, for our citizens, that they continue to feel safe in their homes and when they're out and about in the city of Dallas. So, and with regards to, I know we're having the change in the philosophy related to the miles on the car. I mean, if there's other ways we can look at it, if it can be, you know, less. Do we have cars out there that we purchased that haven't been outfitted yet, and they're not ready, or?
Right. We don't have a just-in-time inventory replacement schedule.
Okay.
So we try to time it throughout the delivery of what the manufacturer delivers the car. And so, yeah, we will have cars on the lot waiting for the trigger to reach the mileage
okay.
cap to be changed. So you could see some cars waiting at the lot to be replaced. But it's the schedule that we're trying to. We're getting closer and closer
okay.
to just-in-time inventory replacement, but we're just not there yet.
Or just watching how our cars, if the officers are in two per car, not always in one per car, if it, you know, reduces mileage, the officers are still out there. But
yes.
just to be able to look at it different ways so we're effectively spending the money. I have a few other questions. I'm not going to go too long, but with – let's see, on page in our big book, when you look at the way in departments that are spending more money for, we still have, sorry, I'm going to get to my, the management services, it's under 5.1 to 3.1.1. It's a big jump in, and how we're spending money. Could you address why that's needed? Because if you look on that page, we've got an issue. We have a performance issue in that. It's 5.1. We're going from spending $1.5 million to $2 million.
The majority of the cost increase is related to the total compensation study.
Okay. just because I'm having difficulty with the performance measurement is that we're not on track. And then, but we're just, are we just going to have a solution by spending more money or? Actually, it's going from 5.6 million to 6.2. The 311 customer service center. Okay.
Just go to the table.
Or to the mic.
Oh, to the mic.
Okay, we'll try it again. Oh, now it's on. All right. We do have a performance issue. We've got a technology issue. We've been trying to get the phones upgraded and the software related to them. We just went through a major upgrade of the software over this past weekend in which the software we were using from AT&T, it wasn't sending the calls through, and so it for the customers, it sounded like we were busy and the call takers were waiting for the call. So we're working on the technology piece. In the briefing, you'll also see additional technology pieces for 311 that's related to a kind of technology that when the call comes in and you've called us before, your information will pop up so we'll know who you are, what service requests you've put in previously so that we can better address your questions. There's another software enhancement that we're going to put in which when the operators log on to the 311 computer system, they'll also be logging in on the Kronos clocks, which is the timekeeping software, so that it's time really on the phone, not walking around putting your purse up or going to the ladies' room or that kind of thing. And we're also putting in software that will have what's called a virtual hold. And so if we are completely backed up and you call and you don't want to just sit there and listen to our new improved music because we are getting music so that it's not so boring to just sit there to silence, the virtual hold will allow you to leave your name and number, and when the next operator comes free, the system will call the person back and you get you get your call answered in the queue, but you don't actually have to be sitting there on hold holding the phone in your hand. So those are some of the improvements that we're working on. Some of this software will allow us to better track when calls are coming in so we can more closely define when we need operators there. And we're also going to pilot taking 311 calls from home so that if we see that we have a real peak period or if we see that an ice storm is coming, we can have operators, you know, come in for a few hours or a whole shift in case of bad weather. So we're using technology to really try to improve the service delivery and stop the downtime waiting for the phone system to catch up with us.
Okay. Thank you. And I won't point any more of those out, but what I just wanted to illustrate was that there's several areas that when we are grading ourselves where we're not on track, and then that's where I see increase of dollars. And I just want to make sure that we're figuring out the problem and not just pouring money at it. But that and then we know that if the money is going to be the fix or the, you know, the philosophy behind that. So and that we continue to really keep our citizens and their priorities first and foremost and keep our government down, as Mr. Griggs had pointed out. And I'm happy to see that we've got the some of the restored services and some of the enhancements for both the animal services and library. I know we're not there yet on those, but it's going to take time and a couple budgets to get caught up. So thank you for listening and getting those things included. And I just encourage you or challenge you to continue to look for ways without using dollars that we can come up with solutions more effectively and efficiently. Thanks.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
First of all, Mr. Gonzalez, thank you very much to you and your staff for working to be able to address a lot of the concerns that our constituents have. Obviously, we're not going to make everybody happy, but I want to make sure that we at least try. And why I say that is because we want to make sure that what we do is to improve the better quality of life for our children and for our families in this city. And I think that we can get there if we communicate. As we've been talking about this continuously, I see your budget number, but I wanted to ask a few questions, and I have. I would like to ask if you would, or if the staff in particular departments can share something with me. I want to make sure I understand in page 18, the declining court revenues, you know, how does that come about? And if you could share that with the staff and let me know. It doesn't necessarily have to be right now. Page 25. I see the increased funds for senior medical transportation service, but I want to make sure and understand that it's not only in what we had before, but if it's any particular zip codes that are involved, if I could get that information as well. Is it the same number of zip codes that we have now, or is it additional? And if so, where and how did we come to that number?
Oh, just real quick. It was a request that was made for additional.
Okay. And where? That's my question. Page 27, it's I'm looking, am I understanding correctly, that the blue is effective January 2015 and the red is effective April 2015, right? I want to understand, first of all, I think it's good that we have an increase in hours for our constituency, but particularly, like, for example, in District 6 in the Arcadia Park area, I want to see and or ask, because I know that there's the time that we have right now, is that a good time for the neighborhood, or is there something that we can work with them to be able to get more to come to the library and be a part of, maybe work with the school as well so that we can be able to have them? Because I know that a great majority of them go, you know, to work and to school. The kids are in school where the parents are at work and whatnot, that maybe we can work together to not only make use of that location, but as well, if I understand correctly, it's not when we increased the hours and in the locations, at this location, it's closed on Sunday. And if there's a way that we could be able to work to where we would open it on Sunday, or why? I want to listen to your thoughts. On page, I got that from page 63. On page 28, I want to understand if you can explain on the arts, increased cultural arts funding, what funding and where, and compare, if you could explain the comparison between the small groups and the large groups, and how did that come about? And is this number the same number is this number more than what we had last year? And if so, good. And if not, why not? And or what did we change and why? Because it's very important, I think, when we talk about this page, it's not only cultural arts, but it's also recreation and education, which is something that we need to, you know, as the mayor talks about the education for our children, we want to make sure that we have this accessible to our kids in the city as well, especially in the recreation centers. And we have these arts groups that are in not only our rec centers and our schools, but we want to make sure that we continue that partnership that we have. And I think that we've had it for a while and it's been going well. But we also want to make sure that we help. And I continue to talk about how we can help you to help them to be successful in this partnership that we have together. I believe that I also shared with you about the public art, making sure that we have, you know, the maintenance together, because, you know, I'll speak again in District 6, like Benito Juarez, you know, the statue and the Zaragoza statue, just to name a few of many others that are in the district. We want to make sure that they are, you know, maintained, and so we want to make sure that we work on that. On page 29, I know that it was asked, Mr. Winters, before, as far as, you know, like, how did you come about to deciding how this was determined, as far as like what locations are going to be open at how many hours and stuff. I will share, even though Arcadia Park is not in District 6, I know that it's right across the street from District 6. So with constituents going there continuously, we want to make sure that we understand. I know there's also a strong senior program that goes there to participate, so we want to make sure that we continue in having, and why did that not increase, one. And two, overall, I know you gave us a list one time of, and maybe you haven't, I just didn't see it, you know, like what you shared, if I understood you correctly, earlier you said that how you determined how many hours were in how many certain recreation centers, it was because of the participation and, you know, how many people attend and whatnot, right? Well, I know that I've seen that list before, and Arcadia was at the top, as well as other recreation centers. So I wanted to understand that, and if you get a chance, if you would share that, I really appreciate it. Okay. I'm very pleased to hear and see as well that Anita Martinez is going to have 60 hours, which I, as you shared in the little notes, that it's closed now because of renovations. And I can tell you that the community is looking forward to Anita Martinez opening, Recreation Center opening, because it's also adjacent to Lorenzo Zavala Elementary, which is what they work with to be able to use the gym, and I think that's going to be wonderful. And so thank you for, I mean, I'm very appreciative of the patience more than anything from the constituency, but it is going to come, and it's going to be real good, and I know that they're going to like it. On page 31, Mr. Gonzalez, thank you very much for what I see in regards to our employees. We want to make sure for us to be able to serve our constituency that we have our employees happy and appreciative. So this is perhaps a small step, but it's a step that we were able to share with them. And speaking of employees, I know that we shared, or I'm going to speak for myself, I shared to be able to help the city secretary's office, because we want to make sure that we have the help that we need to serve our constituency. So I don't know where that's at, Mr. Gonzalez, but if that's taken care of, thank you. And if not, that we need to work on it, because we need to make sure that we have enough staff to be able to serve our constituency as a whole. On page 62, Chief, if you can, when you get a chance, I see the tag numbers, I mean the tag areas, but there are some in particular that I'm wanting to know about that cover the areas of District 6. And if you can share with me, because I know, like, in, for example, on the top in the District 6 area is the high streets, as well as in the northwest area. I'm sure probably it's I mean, I want to see, like, where it is exactly, because okay. I know it's probably in between District 6 and District 2,
yes.
But so that I can better understand that. And obviously, I think maybe the area that I talked about before is probably between District 6 and District 13.
Okay.
So if you could, you know, specify that, I'd really appreciate it, because I think that's very important. I know in the area on the top, I don't have the red dots like Mr. Kleiman had the other day, but over there by the 635 area, they had brought it to my attention about, you know, wanting and needing more patrol. So I'm sure that we're working on, and I know I've shared it with the Northwest Division, But I want to make I wanted to just see and get an understanding of okay. this page right here. On
we will.
Appreciate you, sir. And Mr. Mayor, I have that's all I have for right now. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Kleinman.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm usually a person that likes to excel in areas and break records. And once again, we have broken the record for the highest budget in the history of the city of Dallas. I'm really amazed that the city manager's office has delivered a $55 million windfall in new taxes and managed to spend every penny of it without any regard to trying to get even look at the effective tax rate, which would have still netted a windfall of about $22 million to the budget, even if we were to roll back to that rate. I know I asked about that a few times, but we never really saw, an effective tax rate budget. I don't know if there's a reason for that or anybody would like to address that.
Well, I would suggest that it was presented in the form of those services that were below the line. If you recall, when we presented at several of the briefings, there was a amount that was roughly to keep at expenses within the lines that we were projecting, and those were at the point of being considered above the line. And there was others that were considered below the line in terms of priority. And all the comments, or not all, most of the comments that we received was wanting to make sure that we worked as hard as possible to see about funding those items. And if you go back and you look at what we had to work with in terms of the committed commitments that we had for that $55 million, what you see is about 27 million dollars of services that were in the enhancement or other below the lines items that were actually funded from numerous types of savings or efficiencies.
Well, I think that I just don't feel like we're going to be seeing a net $55 million increase in services. And I think if we look at the slide 18, I see that slide differently than maybe some people do. I see that as the big drain and just money going down the drain. So I'm, really concerned that this I think the city manager's office clearly responds to what they hear from the council. And, I think this council yet again said, let's just spend the money. And I'm disappointed in that. I'm disappointed that we couldn't look at working towards a little bit of restraint, as we talked about. Last year I was told I was too late when I started asking for that. So this year I started asking for that right off the bat. But yet again, as I say, the devil is in the details, and we can all talk a big game about wanting to save money and being fiscally conservative. But then when you get down to the detail of each individual little program, it's very hard to do that in a broad enough space that it really aggregates or accumulates anything. It's just frustrating. It's frustrating to see that we have these big tax increases for our citizens, that our citizens are going to have to bear the burden of a major tax increase on their property tax, yet we're also going to have an increase in water bill and sanitation fees. So, maybe you can help explain why we're doing a tax increase and sanitation fee increase and water bill increase.
In the other two areas, they are very closely tied with the cost of providing the service. And the cost of water is one where if we do not invest in not only our very present needs but our future needs in terms of major infrastructure improvements to get at sources of water, we jeopardize literally our future. With regards to sanitation, even though it is in the general fund, it is structured much like a enterprise system in that the costs that are there are to pay for the services that we directly deliver. Now, in that particular area, even though it is an increase, it is an increase that you go back to, I think it was 09. It's only like 30 cents that we had an increase since that time. And if you want to use inflation and anything that might be reasonable to give a context about that cost, it has been very competitive.
Yeah, and in sanitation, I know we've done some things to try to reduce some costs, like went to once a week and put in the recycling programs and things like that. But again, it's granted those sanitation water areas where it's full cost recovery, but it's still, you know, a burden on our citizens to live in the city with such high fees. Can we take a look at slide 11, please? So year-over-year changes in expense. I'm looking at some of the big ones. Talk to me about aviation, why we're looking at a $25 million increase in aviation.
Very simply put, that is now bringing on the debt of a new terminal. That's debt that is being paid for through revenues that we're going to be collecting in landing fees, et cetera. So it is new improvements coming online to be paid for, being paid by new revenue.
So that's debt service, both principal reduction as well as
yes.
And is that a revenue? Do we issue a revenue bond on that? How are we?
Yes, we.
Borrow from the airline. What happened to all that?
Well, I don't want to start getting into an area, okay. but generally speaking, and Mark can correct me if I start getting going astray here, but basically, you do have revenue bonds that are backed by city's aviation department, but in this particular case, we have the added advantage of having Southwest Airlines also kissed, or more than kissed, the debt. They are taking ultimate responsibility for that debt.
But we do repay them.
We repay the debt, but if we were they pay us through their landing fees, and ultimately, if there was a problem, it would be their debt.
So we use the landing fees to repay the debt. Right.
Yes.
Right. Okay. And what are the landing?
And I might add, there's also other fees that we can associate, but it's basically that business that going on there gets assessed, service fees, et cetera, that pay for that.
And what are the landing fees for general aviation?
Out there at left field, we don't have any.
And at executive?
I do not have any as well.
And vertiport?
None.
So if you have a private plane, if you can afford to have a private plane, you can land at our airport for free.
Yes.
Have y'all ever looked at maybe seeing if we could assess some landing fees on those, or
yes.
How many flights we? I don't know what the flight numbers are, if it makes any sense, but seems crazy to be subsidizing a guy with a big jet by letting him land for free.
The answer is yes. We have looked at that, and it is something that we're thinking a little bit more about. But here's some of the other concerns that come along with it. That aviation business is in a very competitive market. There's other alternatives, and literally they can fly away. So we have to be careful about how we approach assessing fees. The other benefit that we get is the economic vitality that goes on in those businesses that are out there. Mark, if you can remind me the number of people that are employed.
Guys, let's get the microphone working. This is kind of goofy every time.
Oh, just walk over there to that thing.
Okay, now it's working. We have roughly 9,500 jobs on airport. That's both at the terminal through TSA, the airlines, and then the fixed-based operators, and also what we call the MROs, or major maintenance and repair organizations. So we have a lot of jobs on airport. Gulfstream and Bombardier have major repair and painting facilities. So it does make a difference whether we charge for...
So is the City of Dallas an employment agency, or are we a service agency?
I'm not sure employment agency, but one of our basic missions is to create an environment where we produce jobs.
Okay. On the fees, I would like to see how many landings we're getting and it, the different operations, what the broken down by different operation, what's costing us to operate those. We have a aviation fund or an aviation enterprise, but it's not clear to me what components of that are contributing or what components of that are being subsidized by other components. And I'd like to see kind of what those costs are and figure out that each of those entities is paying its own way, as should be.
Sure.
Let's see. I know I'm kind of jumping around, but let's look at slide 15. This one we talked about last time. I mentioned before, in particular, looking at the culture, arts, recreation, education, that's the one place that seems to be getting squeezed. And actually, if you look at the different percentages across the board, it looks like that was being squeezed at the expense of economic vibrancy. So maybe you can address why we're, over these period of years, we've continued to squeeze down culture, arts, recreation, education, and we'll continue to expand economic vibrancy.
Well, the one that has principally been, obviously, the biggest footprint is public safety.
But the percentage on public safety really have not changed significantly over that seven-year period.
If the
Mr. Kleinman,
yes.
On this one, economic vibrancy also includes a lot of the street services. And as you can tell with one of these charts, we've added some additional resources for streets. So streets isn't within that category.
Okay. Streets was not in that category in like 08 and 09?
It was. We've just added in the last couple of years additional street resources.
Just street resources have been significantly increased at the cost of cultural arts. Okay, let's see. 17, can we look at that real quick? I'm sorry, there's a thing called no departments, at about $8 million increase. I'm sorry, I can't look at what line item it is, but there's a no department allocation, but it had an $8 million increase, and I was wondering if you could explain that. Yeah, non-departmental. So non-departmental is a pretty large category, $49 million. What's the $8 million going on there? And non-departmental doesn't really help us much because that means we don't really know what it is.
So non-departmental are those expenses that aren't necessarily attributable to any single department. So, but the big increase you're seeing is that's where we include our TIP expense. The TIP went up, the master lease program. Both of those are in that. When you look at it departmentally, they're in non-departmental.
Okay, so the TIP stuff went up because as property values go up, TIP. So we've raised those taxes, we've put them into and we've then spent it in those particular TIFs.
Right. It's really just a pass-through, but for budget purposes, we show the full revenue, and then we show the TIF expense separately. Right.
And then the master lease seems to be this year's whipping boy for
whatever
goes up somewhere. We seem to like to blame it on that master lease. I've heard this at least two more
right.
times.
Right. Well, I can definitely provide more detail on what that program is paying for.
Okay. Thank you. Number 24, slide 24, please. $2 million for Fair Park. I think last year we talked about it light up Fair Park or something like that. How much of this money is going into Fair Park and how much of it is not going into Fair Park?
Of the $2 million, $1.25 is going into Fair Park. The remainder, $150,000. Is, and I mentioned a while ago, there is $750 that's being managed by Public Works. $150 is going into extending the Santa Fe Trail to the front door of Fair Park, which is a critical project, and the remaining $500,000 is going into improvements along Martin Luther King Boulevard that is a major entrance directly into Fair Park.
That's the Public Works component.
Yes, sir.
And then last year, what was the breakdown on that $2 million also?
I'm sorry.
Last year, do you remember with the breakdown on that $2 million, how much went to Farrell Park and how much didn't?
I do. Let's see. Last year it was $600,000 for Martin Luther King.
And can someone from Public Works address what's going on with the $1.1 million that we're dedicating to Martin Luther King Boulevard?
For this year or for next year or both years?
Well, for both years.
Both years.
So there's $600,000 last year. This year is $500,000 coming.
Yeah, for this year, we have combined the $500,000 that Public Works was given out of the $2 million for this year with the bond money that we had for MLK for streetscaping improvements. And what we are doing is streetscape improvements at the intersection of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King at Atlanta. And we're doing crosswalks, we're doing streetscaping, and part of the streetscaping includes monuments. And we've come up with an urban design scheme for the whole MLK area. So the streetscaping will continue on up from the DART station to the entrance at Fair Park. There are kind of columns to help identify that you're arriving at Fair Park. Those would be funded in the future. And two of those columns are going to go at the median of Perry and Martin Luther King. The other $100,000 for this year was for facade improvements that the Economic Development Department did in conjunction with several businesses along MLK. For this coming year, we would do the second year of kind of streetscaping improvements. I think part of the desires of both the community, the Fair Park Task Force, is to continue that lighting that you see inside the park. I would call it Christmas tree lighting, but it's that kind of the little sparkling lights along the trees along MLK. And if additional funding is given for the following fiscal year, we'll continue the streetscaping improvements right at Fair Park. Otherwise, it could wait for a future bond program.
And what are the that's a great summary of the assets that we're putting in place there. But what is the objective that's driving this? What's our goal out of spending this money?
I'll speak to that because much of it Ms. Davis and I worked on together. The thought is that Martin Luther King Boulevard is one of the key entryways to Fair Park. And if we don't make that look as spectacular as Fair Park is, we're just asking people to turn around and go back. And so we think, coming back to Mr. Carraway's objective of trying to get more and more traffic, making that area a key entryway, much like Disney World or Disneyland or anything like that. And so that's what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. I think really probably the main key entryway to Fair Park is probably off of I-30, the second Avenue exit.
Depends on how you go. I mean, one of the reasons people go that way is because they don't like to come Fair Park. They don't like to come down Martin Luther King. So I think we accomplish it. But that is the main entrance, I will say, Mr. Kleiman.
I don't know about my fellow council members, but I certainly wouldn't mind having $1.1 million dropped into my district for some streetscaping as well. So maybe we can talk about that. I've got some on private property, some walls that are falling down on Hillcrest and some other things like that that could probably use some help, some alleys and things like that as well. I just do think on the slide, you know, maybe we ought to be breaking that out because I think Fair Park stands on its own, and if we're putting streetscaping money into a district, we ought to identify it as such. Let's see. I think is this one also where bear with me. Oh, the concierge service. Dedicated positions provide concierge service within building inspection. I think this is a great program in that we need to do everything we can to move all of our building inspection services to more rapid turnaround. I realize this one is dedicated to Grow South. I think I, when I looked through the book at some of the other things, I was actually shocked or surprised to find that in our permitting department, the service levels agreement is 12 business days to turn around plans. So that's like 3 weeks. And then if you pay to expedite, it's 5 business days. I mean, that's not really very friendly to the people that are trying to do business in the city of Dallas. I think we need to really work on our service levels, much, much faster turnarounds. Some of our suburban neighbors turn stuff around in a day. So I don't know why it takes 12 business days to turn around a set of plans. And then if they pay extra, it still takes 5 business days. And that just seems crazy. Maybe the concierge service can be an example for other parts of that department to see if we can't turn things around more quickly so that we can have, if we want to have economic vibrancy in this city, people need to be get in and out of our departments more quickly. So I'd appreciate some work on that. Let's see. What do I have on 65? Okay, I think we talked about 65. It's slide 43, please. Because I want to end on a high note. I know I've done a lot of complaining and a lot of bitching and whining about where we're going to spend the money, but I really do appreciate that the Comptroller's Office and City Manager taking a serious look at our debt service situation, and that y'all went through this exercise, and I hope we will continue to work on this model to work towards seeing if there are ways that we can either eliminate the bond program or use the bond program more judiciously and also build up some capital reserves. So thank y'all for putting that in this one, and for my colleagues, let's continue to focus on this. There's a lot on the slide, but one thing that it does come down to on the slide is we're paying, I think, in interest this year around $30 million or something like that, $26 million in interest payments. And that's just money could be going to services. I understand that the capital component, we're building more streets and doing other things that's providing, but just paying out interest, going into a pay-go system, I think we could really reduce that and then use the money for other services. And that is all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kleiman. A process check. We've made it halfway through. We're about 2 hours and 10 minutes into the conversation. We have to be out of this room at 5 o'clock, okay? So I apologize for those of you that signed up later, but let us, the next seven, let's just be cognizant of that. Thank you, Mr. Medrano. Oh, Mr. Kadane, I apologize. And then Mr. Medrano.
Okay. Thank you. I will be quick, Mr. Mayor. On page 21, I had a question about we're giving a uniform personnel 4% across the board. Explain the 5% annual step up. Is that when you move them up in rank? Or does everybody get that 5%?
No, it's the in terms of the meet and confer agreement, there was a two components on salary increase, the 4% that you mentioned, and a step increase for those that are eligible. You do not have to move up a rank. You move up a step within that rank. For the police department, that impacts about 76% of their folks, and in the fire department, about 70% of their ranks, I mean, of their individuals. So for those, during the year, they would be getting a total of a 9%.
9%.
Yes.
That's what I was getting at.
Yes, sir.
Which I think is great. Okay, on 28, Mr. Mayor, on the cultural affairs, the contracts, the maintenance of public art, and then we have the utilities for the Dallas Summer Musicals. Is that the funds that will take care AC, their utilities that they were referring to?
Yes, sir. They had presented to the council at one point. We had visited with them, and that takes
care of it. So that's in this budget?
Yes, sir.
To do that. Great. Okay, the and our art system is a huge draw for this city, so I think we need to continue to maintain what we have done and hopefully in certain areas increase. I know out at my facility, at our facility at the bathhouse, we don't even have maintenance. We can't get maintenance year round. It's only $20,000. So I'm wondering if there's some way we can come back and maybe change a couple of things in this budget where we get these small items. AC, do you know?
I think that's
maybe
AC.
Joey.
If I may also, though, the council added an amendment in this current year budget for $19,000 for custodial contract for maintenance,
so
and
got,
that is included in the upcoming proposed one.
Oh, great.
It continues.
Thanks. Okay. And then I'm going to ask Jody, if on is she gone? Somebody in water? Okay, now maybe you can answer it. I'm just wondering if within her budget, does she have funds for future water?
Short answer is yes, we do have plans for future water. The projections for this current rate increase as well as future revenue increases are projected in this budget.
So we will have funds to, and I'm Jody and I talk all the time about your reservoirs and everything else, and I'm wondering if in your future funding you've got something in there for us to find this, the reservoirs and the systems we need for water in the future.
Included, and I missed some of the conversation because I was in a different room.
Okay.
I apologize.
That's okay.
But if I understand your question about additional water for the future, included in this budget is some additional studies related to work in the Sulphur River Basin, as well as the potential of adding our reuse program, moving it along further, among a few other things. So the answer to your question is yes.
Yes. Okay. Good. I'm very concerned about that. The public... On our animal shelter, we have service officers in that shelter. Are they fully staffed? Our officers that go out to find the animals.
They have funding. They have some vacancies now, but those positions are funded. They're going through the process, or they're going to be going through the process of advertising and filling those vacancies.
But we do have some vacancies, and we do have funds for them.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we need to get them funded. We need to find some folks. We got one more. Oh, on our library hours and on our recreation hours, AC and Ms. Chipperfield and your staff, I think you all have done what we've wanted done in this budget. You've come up with our hours, and next year these hours will be like our libraries. We only have so many, right, this year that we're giving hours to?
Right.
They're not all.
Right. 12 branches this year, and then the remaining 15 would get an additional 6 hours the following.
Well, next year.
15, 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's excellent, and I appreciate you all going, doing some of the things, and the rec centers are the same way. Is that not correct? I think you have certain rec centers that are open certain hours,
right,
more, which hopefully next year we're going to maybe get most of them. Or we don't know about the rec centers.
Right. And I don't think we have, maybe Willis does, a plan for the subsequent fiscal year, but we're definitely increasing hours in 14-15 for the rec centers.
Okay. But I think that's a big plus. And I think that I think we're going to have some more questions once we have our town hall meetings. So I appreciate what you all have come up with so far. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Medrano.
Let me see where I want to start. Well, I'm glad to see that quite a few of the things that I wanted to see in the budget are here. One of the main concerns just being former school board president and the chair of the education task force is our libraries. I don't think this is going to get it done. I know that, Mayor, you're passionate about education. We want to make a difference. Whenever you talk to someone in the community about what's one of the biggest problems in our city, and they always say our schools, our school district. And if we really want to help and make an impact, I think we have to put our money where our mouth is and really fund these libraries for our students. I don't think this is enough. I think we need to be able to put more money into the libraries. I know we're trying to do that. I hope I can have you guys support. That's the biggest issue. That whenever you talk to someone, you know it. I know I have Mr. Griggs' support and others on the task force, but this is one of the things that the task force asked for is increased library hours, and 6 or 7 is not going to be enough. So I do also have concerns, as Councilmember Griggs and Ms. Gates suggested, about the e-government section, and as I guess Scott put it, the back office increase. I think you need to take a look at that again. Let's see here. Some of that money can probably go to the arts, animal services, our seniors, our streets. So, but I think me, what I'm going to focus on is our libraries. If we really want to help our kids in the future of our city, we need to put our money where our mouth is. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Madrona. Judge Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Chipperfield, thank you for your presentation. As I say to you almost every year, you have come a long way from where you started from, and you continue to improve, and I appreciate that. Mr. Gonzalez and the rest of the staff, thank you for the work you've done. Staff, know that unlike previous years, I have not read every line of every page of the 506 or so pages that are in here, because it's my last budget, and I may or may not finish reading all of those pages. However, I did notice on the first page that there are 106 of you commended. I want to add to that commendation, Carl Zavakowski, as usual, you're number 106. Don Whitmire, you're number 100, and all of the others of you. Congratulations on being commended. Additionally, congratulations to the staff on receiving the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award for the year beginning October 2013. Ms. Chipperfield, how many years in a row has the City of Dallas been awarded that award?
I think about 14 or 15 years.
In a row.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite commendable. Public safety. Chief Brown, I need to know overall, based on the budget as presented, can you continue with the downward trajectory that has occurred under your leadership?
We're determined to continue, yes, and I believe the support you've given us with this budget and all the previous budgets will help us do that.
We're reinstituting PSOs. I remember a number of years ago there were PSOs.
We do still have that position. We just want to expand the use of PSOs, particularly in our crime scene unit and the way we save time and tasks, particularly like at the jail where officers have 3 to 4 hour waits during peak times. You can have a PSO take that prisoner and book that prisoner in. The wait times for a record can be an hour or more. We can have a PSO wait for a record during an accident or during an arrest where a car is towed that can save time for the officer to get back in the field, get back to patrolling neighborhoods. Crime scene sworn detective now can stay in the field and patrol while a PSO can be a crime scene technician and perform those duties of fingerprinting and taking pictures of crime scenes. And so I think it's efficiency, I think, at its best when we're looking at the PSO rank and its use in the department and by way of keeping officers in neighborhoods patrolling.
Excellent. And finally, the last one I have for public safety, I want to know the 9% increase, the increase that comes out to approximately 9%. Where does that put Dallas in the context of surrounding police departments? And I'm not talking about San Antonio, Austin, Houston. I'm talking about the near police departments.
you could spin that a lot of ways in the way you answer that. I think if you look at base pay, along with all of the incentives we get, along with the cross-the-board raise you are giving us in this budget, along with the steps coming back, our total package, if you include our pension, makes us competitive with our surrounding cities, with our total package, including pensions, all of our incentives, we're competitive. And we see that in the way we recruit, although we compete with everyone in the state and in the southern region and across the country with how we recruit and who we recruit, but we're competitive with the way we're compensating our officers. We will say, though, there's never enough that you can give us. We will say that, but we are competitive.
Well, we're not going to give you any more, so you can say that. But
yes,
Chief, that's all I have on public safety. I have some other things. But, Chief, before I leave public safety, I want to once again commend you for the tremendous job you've done. You take a lot of flack in the press and other places. I don't think you deserve that. I think you are the finest police chief in America. And so you just keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Now, I have a question, Ms. Chipperfield, on reserves, and this may be because I haven't read the other 499 pages. I don't see anything on reserve. Tell me what is happening with our reserve. Are we putting an increased amount in?
So usually our reserves increase at the end of the fiscal year once we balance our books and we look at the change in revenues versus expenditures. So right now we're forecasting that we would end 2015 with a reserve in the general fund of about $119 million, which is 37 days worth of expenses. So that's our forecast for right now. And so we've been able to, as we've recovered from the recession, add back to that because we did dip into our reserves during the recession.
$119 million you're anticipating?
Yes, ma'am.
At the end of the fiscal year?
At the end of the year, yes.
What do we have right now that's going into reserve? At the end of 2014?
Yeah, actually, I should have stated at the end of 14, and because the budget is balanced, revenues equal expenditures, it would right now be the same number for 14 and 15.
I see. All right. All right. On the Fair Park, I am pleased with the improvements and the idea of streetscaping for MLK. And I will say to my very good friend from the north that if you had an asset in your district, such as Fair Park, which was underutilized, we would think of using that kind of money, but you don't. And so I think it's a good... I think this is a good usage of the money because MLK is a primary entrance into the Fair Park. And while Mr. Mayor does not live in my part of town, I believe he has correctly assessed why people come off at 30. It's because they don't like riding down MLK. It's not now what we would like it to be to ride down. Like Mr. Griggs, I would like to see the org chart and have it explained to me. I don't need that done now, but I do need that done. I am concerned with the addition of high-level people. I do not manage personnel, and I don't intend to. I don't want to. But it appears to me that some of the jobs that are being given to new high-level people could have remained where they were with some additional efficiencies. So I have some very, very serious concern about high-level additions until I see some explanation as to how that actually saves us money. One of those, and Mr. Gonzalez, you and I have talked about this previously, but one of those is this chief wellness issue. I do not understand why that was not an added duty as opposed to a standalone duty. Help me to understand that, please.
this particular effort to really move the needle on wellness for 13,000 employees is something that is going to take every bit of time for somebody to spend on moving that needle. It is a big needle to move. It is about changing the culture that we have throughout the organization. It's about how to institute changes in our operation throughout the organizations in terms of departments and how they work. It's about what are the incentives that we might be able to include in our medical program that would help send the signals. It is about getting out there and selling this program to not only department heads, but to really, literally, each, almost every one of our employees. I would hope that within the not-too-distant future, and I'm saying about a year, 2 years, that we would see a change in our overall health profile. The consequences of us doing that are enormous on many levels. It has the potential of saving millions of dollars in our medical program. It has the impact of improving productivity. It has the improvement of enhancing every employee's quality of their life. And so for that reason, I felt that we should be making an investment along those lines in order to make that happen. And I don't want that effort to be diminished by having other responsibilities, but to be focused on making that happen.
I appreciate that commentary. I need to see how that is going to work out in actual practice. And like Ms. Gates, I want to see the savings. I hear you telling me that that is going to save us. I do not see how that is going to work. I've heard what you said. I heard what you said when we talked about that before. And I do not see how that is going to work. And I reiterate, I'm going to need more conversation on why that particular function, as eloquently as you have described it, is a standalone. And I'm not suggesting that the person you intend to put in it doesn't have the talent. I think he does. He's tremendously talented. But I'm having some difficulty with that. And so please know that I want to hear more drilling down on how that works and why you deem that necessary for the organizational structure to move forward, why that could not have just been added to somebody's job. Finally, on slide 30, it's either 31 or 32. The top says continue employee retiree health benefits. Okay, that's it. That's the slide. I think this is a Ms. McCall question. How did you get to these numbers? Why are retirees, I believe it's retirees, going to have to pay more money? How did these numbers come about? That's what I want to know. How did you get to these particular numbers?
Judge Hill, the retirees on the pre-65 retirees on the self-insured plan are cost approximately $12,000 per person per year. The city's subsidy for the retirees is actually higher than it is for active employees. We have continued to increase the retiree rates at $25 per month to try and lessen the city's subsidy of retirees so that we can continue to subsidize employees at a greater rate.
Okay. And the last bullet concerning the Affordable Care Act, does that mean employees and retirees are going to be paying more money or less money?
On the whole, they'll actually be paying slightly less, but per person, it just would vary on their personal health situation.
I see. All right. Thank you. And Mr. Gonzalez, is this part of what the chief wellness officer is supposed to be looking at?
It's one part, but certainly only a small part, because all that is reflective of is how we have our current medical plan laid out in terms of premiums. What is at the end of the day with respect to this premium program, the way it's laid out, is that we pay out in the form of benefits close to around $120 million. 80% of it unnecessarily, at least if people were 80% of it for syndromes and conditions and illnesses that have at its root lifestyle or other choices that are being made by individuals that could be different. Now, if we can make a difference in those choices that people are making with regards to nutrition, exercise, and their lifestyle, those numbers might be different, would be different, because we would have a different cost associated with it.
All right. I'm going to reiterate that I'm going to need much more explanation, because I don't know how you're going to tell me to stop eating pork chops and make me stop doing it. I don't understand that. And so I'm going to need more conversation. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Judge Hill. Mr. Kingston.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Can we go to 2.2 in the budget?
Hello? Hello?
Do we have the budget?
What page?
2.2, page 70.
Page 70.
What a big book. You want to read it for you? You got it right here. You need it? It's on this book right here.
Okay. What slide do you want there?
I don't care about the PowerPoint presentation. I wanted to look at the budget.
Get the slide. Good slide. Go ahead.
Do we have the budget loaded where anybody can see it? The question when we get there is going to be why do we need an extra person for authorized hearings when we only do like two a year?
I didn't hear you. Keith? I didn't hear what he said.
Okay, move the mic. Apparently they didn't hear it.
When we get to the page in the budget, the question is going to be, why do we need one more head count here when we only are putting one or two hearings per year per planner?
Mr. Kingston, that position is it's on. Okay. We do have a long list of authorized hearings. One of the reasons those take so long is because of the enormity of some of those hearings. They can be as small as a single lot, or they can be the entire Jefferson corridor, one of the ones we're working on now. Or North Oak Cliff. Those take so long for the largest ones, that some of the smaller ones, there's a lot of frustration by our citizens and sometimes elected and appointed officials. So we wanted to have some additional capacity there to handle some of the smaller ones that kind of get log jammed behind those giant ones that tend to take a year or two.
Where's zoning reside? In the org chart?
Teresa and I are transitioning, and it'll be mine within the next 60 days.
It was hard to understand from the emphasis on planning with regard to Ms. O'Donnell's new position.
I'll need that delineated, please, on the org chart. Additionally, I'd asked last week for an org chart with actual names in it and broken down by percentage of the budget attributable to each department and each manager. I need to see that as soon as possible. I'm in the process of hiring, of doing the search for the city manager. What we learned is that typically ACMs know that information off the top of their head, so I'm a little displeased with the amount of time it's taken, 7 days, to get that. Can we go to 3.8? Why are we adding inspectors? I mean, sanitarians. Page 132.
We wanted to add a couple of sanitarians at the front desk. What we find when folks come to the window there to pay for the registration fees, they have questions that the office staff, the office assistants, just cannot answer, and that would allow us the capacity to rotate somebody and then have a sanitarian to greet people at the windows, provides a better customer service, get their questions answered, so by the time we go out there for the inspection, they're prepared.
Okay, I'll have some follow-up about that later. Do we have any increase in foodborne illness in Dallas?
No, sir, we do not.
Okay, let's look at 4.5. I may not be totally familiar with the management structure of each of these entities, but a lot of them are private. What's the reason for this costing almost $18 million?
These are nonprofit groups and agencies that manage park facilities on this particular page, Councilman. So the ones that are listed there, big ones, Arboretum and Zoo, we do pay them an annual stipend, operational stipend, in varying amounts by agency per year. So you're seeing here the operational stipends that the city grants to these these groups.
Might be an area to take a look at to see if our private, we want to preserve our public-private partnerships with these groups for certain.
Yes.
But while we're asking for city staff to do more with less and making sure that we're being efficient, let's also politely ask our private partners to do the same.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the staff you see here, Councilman, are basically, it's our contract management staff in the department to manage all of these other outside partners to make sure they're in compliance and following the rules.
5.H, 236. What's the reason for the increase?
So your question is related to the city fleet maintenance. It's the cost associated with work on all of our city fleet, the police cars and the balance of the city fleet. It's primarily personnel cost and associated costs to go with it.
No, 5.H, as in Harry.
So
236.
Page 238. 238. The office services fund or the has built up a balance of about $1 million that's related to the sale of surplus property. So we're simply appropriating those funds to transfer them to the general fund for next year's budget.
Got it. Go to 5.K, please. Kilo.
Yeah.
What's the reason for the increase here?
That's mine. The increase in the health benefits, administration services.
It's costing more to administer the more expensive benefits?
I'm sorry, I can't see that. Oh, we're expecting a slight increase in our consulting contract that's out to bid right now, and we have budgeted additional funds for that. We don't know that it will be, but that's what we're projecting.
What would it cost to provide free gym membership to each city employee, or in the alternative, close the gym and give every employee a membership at a good gym?
We can certainly look into that.
Let's look into that. Might be a forest question at this point. 5.L, please. Internal computer support is up 10%. What's the reason for that? I know this is a pop quiz. Don't think that I'm just trying to move along because I've been told we're on a time limit for some reason that's hard to understand.
That's the full year funding.
Hold on. Ms. Kingston, what do you mean it's hard to understand? We're supposed to have a meeting at 5 o'clock. Do you want to? If we get enough people, we can stay forever. Do you want to do that?
I got a town hall meeting to go to.
I'm just trying to go as fast as I can, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
The increase for that is a full year funding for a lot of the infrastructure that we've replaced in the data center this past year.
I don't understand the answer to that question, but you can see me later. 251, please. Explain to me exactly how convention and event services qualifies as an enterprise fund.
Because the revenues are used to support the operations of the center.
Approximately $60 million in, quote, revenue, unquote.
So for the upcoming fiscal year, the revenue is about $77.4 million.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. $60 million in hotel occupancy plus alcohol?
Right. Those are two revenue sources to the center.
And the center generates all of the hotel occupancy and alcohol tax?
No.
Okay. I think this violates our policy concerning enterprise funds. This is not an enterprise fund. I mean, this is a disguised transfer out of the general fund. Okay, 465, please. This to me seems to indicate a $270,000 increase in total city manager's office budget. Is that accurate?
Yes, there's was an increase in salaries, including mine and some of the other city managers that I hired. And I believe that's the bulk of that.
I just go by what I read in the paper, but it seems like the two city managers, the two new ACM level employees alone would account for more increase in payroll costs than that.
Well, you also have that there were salaries associated with those positions beforehand, so there's the increment that's the increase.
Who left?
Well, when we left, there was Chief Cato that left to the police department. There was Teresa O'Donnell that is over housing plus and planning, which we are showing as an increased cost there. And there is Mr. Turner, who we are paying for outside of this org to be doing the work that I've described earlier.
Okay. Where's the CIS budget?
If you want to turn to page 474, it's at the end.
Cool. Just couldn't see that. Let's go back to the $2 million for Fair Park. If somebody could just research when we voted for that, I thought I was voting to allocate that money to Fair Park and not to public works outside of Fair Park. And I could be remembering that wrong, but that, you know, I just thought of it as Fair Park money. So if somebody would just give me that answer, that'd be great. Why do we need five more city attorneys?
One of those plus a legal assistant is eminent domain. We have a backlog on our major water projects. Acquiring the land, it's in order to lay the pipeline. Three of them are in the general counsel division. We've had a 22% increase year-to-year service requests. In order to try to be more efficient, we're increasing only by 9%, and in fact, we're bringing in junior attorneys for an overall 5% increase.
Do we have, is there some kind of strategic plan on what size the attorney's office should be, or do we just kind of respond ad hoc to demands internally?
We respond to demands internally in the sense that we have to be responsive. When the service requests come in, our goal is to act quickly on them. On the other hand, we are strategically looking at ways to reduce costs. For example, bringing in junior attorneys as opposed to senior attorneys.
Earlier, Mr. Gonzalez, we had a discussion of the ethics officer, and while I agree that this council has made it a policy that ethics should be taught here at the City of Dallas and practiced, we had the ethics officer in Budget, Audit, and Finance last week, and she's excellent. I've talked with her one-on-one. I think she's highly qualified. She was pretty confused on her job description. So I'd like that sorted out, if you could. I also noticed a line item, and I forgot to note where it is, that looked like a new line item for internal efficiency. Is that something that rings a bell? Like a internal task force?
We have had the internal control task force for we'll be going into our third year for that group that works on implementing stronger internal controls, assisting with implementation of audit recommendations. We also are looking to automate some of our controls to strengthen them and to streamline and improve them.
And do I remember right, Gene, that went either from a zero budget to being funded in the new proposed budget, or it was a substantial increase?
No, we added one position to the group with the offset of additional revenue as they're going to work on monitoring our revenue contracts.
Is part of the goal of that group to improve audit compliance?
Yes.
Okay, I really appreciate that. That's a great enhancement. I'm a little concerned in this budget, as Mr. Griggs and Mr. Medrano mentioned, that a lot of this seems to be budget creep. To me, it looks like the budget from last year plus percentage here, percentage there. Which causes me to wonder if we've wrung all of the efficiency out of the organization. Here are a couple of examples. The other week, I was trying to get the brand new Continental Bridge and the Trinity Skyline Trail just beneath it connected down to the Santa Fe Trestle Trail, which is this beautiful trail that's been there for years, connects to literally nothing. And it's going to have to be an on-street connection because, as I discovered in talking to Public Works, doing the connection within the levees of the Trinity, which is ultimately planned, is being held up by the construction of the 30 Bridge and some other stuff down there. And so we looked at wanting to do an on-street connection down Riverfront. In order to do that within the organization of the city of Dallas, it requires you to, I mean, if you're going to create your CC list on the email, it's going to require two different ACMs, two different manager-level employees, essentially three different departments. And we have one of those manager-level employees who's called the bike czar, yet only has control over on-street bike facilities. You have another one who used to be an interim bike coordinator who now, as far as I can tell, his job is to be the liaison between parks trails and public works trails. And so then I followed the org chart up to the person who is ultimately solely responsible for the implementation of the bike plan in Dallas. And guess who it is? It's AC Gonzalez. And I have the feeling he has a lot of other things on his plate. And so that to me, I'm not sure that really, I just don't know if that smacks of getting all the efficiency out of the system. The other thing we learned during the city manager search is that different municipalities budget differently for payroll as a percentage of their budget. And that's a really rough way to look at things because it just depends on what services the city provides. But I'd like to make sure that we're right-sized in terms of you can throw capital, you can throw labor, you can throw technology at a problem. I just want to make sure we're throwing the right input at the problem. That's all I've got right now, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kingston. Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Mayor. I doubt that my questions or comments will be any more mellifluous, how about that for a word, than the rest of the group, but here goes. I'm generally pleased with the direction that the 2014-2015 budget takes us. I think it's well packaged. It basically provides for the basic needs coming out of the recession, so I'm generally happy with there. Still, I think we have many challenges that we know in the streets and alleys and sidewalk issues that we've got, and certainly, you know, red light signalization that we've talked about, street lighting, sewer water line replacement. A lot of those are going to be long-term issues that we're going to have to try to find new money, and obviously I want to be part of the solution there to try to do that as we can, but I think it's important that we continue to drive the debt service down and try to move towards at least a quasi-pay-as-you-go basis so we're not just throwing money at debt service, because I think if we'll tighten our budget in certain areas, I think we'll be able to have those ready monies that we can do some of those things there, and then the interest savings will help propel that. So that's one area that I'd love to see. Still, there's a great need, Chief, you know, for additional officers in Southeast, and we've been dragging 50 to 60 officers really short out in Southeast a long time. And I always try to underscore the fact that, you know, Southeast is the largest geographic area. And for those of you that are not aware of that, it's East Oak Cliff, you know, it's Pleasant Grove, Riley, and Cleburg, and it's a big, gigantic L, so that's a lot of miles to travel. And so, obviously, just by geographic nature, we need more officers there to cover that, and more patrol officers. And we've got a lot of support people that are in homicide, special operations, tactical, SWAT, whatever, all those other things. But we need more people in patrol cars patrolling our neighborhoods to make people feel safe. City Manager, AC, we need more code inspectors. You know, we just simply don't have enough. We've hovered at probably minus two for quite some time, and I think we're one code supervisor short. So they're just not covering the bases. You know, I can drive down any given street at any given time and just make a big long list. And if we're actually traveling, you know, those geographical areas, the code areas, then I think those code inspectors would stumble on those things just like me and some of my constituents do on a daily basis. So that it tells me that we need more resources in that area. Also, I like Mr. Kleinman and Councilman Griggs. I'd like to see more money placed in the rainy day fund, and I'd like an answer. What did we have last year, and what will we have this year, Gene?
At the end of 2013, we had approximately $115 million forecast to have at the end of 2014, $119 million.
So repeat that one more, 115 to 119.
115 to 119.
Okay, so there's an increase of about $4 million.
Right.
Okay. All right. But that's something as we go forward, definitely, I understand running a business that, you know, there's always that oscillation. You're going to have 5, 6, 7 years in a capitalistic economy where things are on the uptrend, right, and all of a sudden you're going to have that gigantic crash. And when it happens, it's never fun. So rather than sweeping everybody away and firing everybody and going into furlough days, it would be a much softer landing if we had a little bit of money to get there. If you'd go to 2.9, that's page 26 of the budget book. I'm going to try to get there. Notice that on the line item, you know, convention center debt service, it's about $20.8 million there. What is the term? When does that expire? When will that be paid off?
We issued 30-year bonds in 2009, so 2038. Yeah, if you look, page 266 has the amortization schedule. Okay. Or, I'm sorry, yeah, 266.
So unless we retire it early, it would be 2038, roughly.
Right. It had a 10-year call, so it would be callable in 2018.
And is that paid with the hotel-motel tax primarily?
Yes, that is what is pledged to the repayment of the bonds.
Okay. Are there any other fees that basically are associated with that, or is it strictly hotel-motel tax?
The hotel-motel tax is pledged to the repayment of the bonds. The alcoholic beverage tax is pledged to the operations of the convention center.
Okay. And I will say, you know, AC, that I'm pleased that we've added additional library hours, but I'm still want to push the envelope, and I think we can do better. And I'm thrilled that we're getting 4 hours on Sunday. That's been a great need for my part of town. So Pleasant Grove Library is going to be the beneficiary of opening Sunday 1 to 5. Also, having Monday hours is an improvement, too. Again, I keep underscoring, other people look for jobs there. Kids do their homework there. We have a lot of young college students that have Eastville College, Pleasant Grove, Paul Quinn College, UNT, you know, Dallas, and so forth. So they use that as a resource right in the neighborhood. It's real critical to that, and also keeps kids busy. And I just believe if the recreation centers are open longer, the libraries are open longer, a lot of the kids are going to be, rather than idleness is the devil's workshop, you know, we'll keep them busy and cheap.
That's right.
That's a crime reduction thing.
I agree.
Critical, very important.
Amen, brother.
Hallelujah on that. Jill, you mentioned when you gave me the briefing the other day about this DART pass thing and said that I know the budget is adding funding to subsidize these DART passes. Can these be serialized to track usage? I mean, I'm not opposed to doing it, but I don't want to see just good money after bad. If they're actually being used, then that's great. But if they're not being used, I'd rather not be charged for them, and I need to know and understand if that's the case. If we're simply just buying them and they're sitting there and not being used, then that's a waste of money.
So well, we can find out more about whether or not they can be tracked, but keep in mind that they're paying for half of it.
It's going to be tiered based on salary. So the lower your salary, the higher the city's subsidy will be. But even at that rate, the employees for Local Pass will still be on the hook for $300. So I don't know that if somebody's going to spend $300 if they're not going to use it.
Well, I think that is a good point there. But, again, just want to make sure that, you know, if they want to use them, I'm all for it. But just if they do not use it, I don't want to see us expend the money for it. And I think there ought to be a way to track that. You know, if you use it, we pay for it. You don't. It's kind of a consignment type feature. I think that's the best way to go about that. Willis, I want to say that I'm not happy that my recreation center is not open yet. Your predecessor promised basically that in July it would be open, and then talking with the contractor, he said they got a 22-day delay because of rain, 6-inch rain that came off the main building right there on where the spot that they were going to put the foundation. And I asked the contractor when he thought it could be done. He said he still was hoping for late August. I went by there recently, and you've got the Tyvek up and the kind of the internal studs up, and no brick on the walls. And I want to underscore the fact that this has been closed 2.5 years, Pleasant Oak Center. It has a double gym. It's the central recreation center of my district, but also the central recreation center of Pleasant Grove. And the kids are not getting any benefit from it, obviously, because it's shuttered. And I know there's been fits and starts, and I get all that. And I've tried to be patient about that, but now I'm hearing it might be January. And I says, you know, golly, it shouldn't take that long to finish construction. And someone said, oh, no, it's not really construction. It's staffing. We're having a staffing issue. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but, you know, it's a hyper delay that's really costing our citizens. You know, we're not having any center at all, really, in the heart of Pleasant Grove.
Councilman, we have been taking a look. I was out there a couple of weeks ago myself. Right now, we believe we can open the center in November, early November. That's what we're targeting.
Okay. I'd like to find some, even if it's shell hours or shell employees.
It's very possible that we can have a soft opening for the center before then. The dedication or grand opening would probably be in November. We'll be glad to get with you and take a close look at that and see what we can do to get it
sooner. Well, it's somewhat of an improvement, and as I said before,
and
Chief, again, that's
when it opens, it'll be great. It'll be the city's first indoor soccer court, as you know.
It's going to be awesome if we can just get there and just get it open.
Yeah.
I guess this is to Warren. I know you provided somewhat of an answer before, but you know, a year ago there didn't seem to be a need for additional city attorneys. Now all of a sudden, pow, five more positions. We can't make do with two or three. We have to have five.
As I had said earlier, the pipeline projects have developed a backlog of eminent domain cases, of acquisition cases. And we've been struggling for this year because they're coming online. As the service requests ramp up from economic development, real estate, and zoning, we've been scrambling to meet those demands, and our turnarounds have been slipping. So we're really playing catch up in both of those areas.
Chief, I'm pleased that we're going to get more cameras in the area. That's another thing, too. I think they're bearing fruit, you know, by having those, and I think it's a threat to the criminal. They know they're under surveillance, and so I think those have been a good crime-fighting tool. So more, you know, and as fast as we can. How many more approximately in southeast Dallas? Can you give me an answer on that?
I don't have it off the top of my head. We do have a list of the next 9 tags that will get the cameras. And let me make sure we convey this message as well. There'll be a reserve of cameras that can be moved around with this, what you're dedicating to us in this budget. And so we be more flexible in the way we move around cameras for crime trends that you bring to our attention or that citizens call and bring to our attention based on our analysis as well.
I'm also hearing that we're going to get more towards the river as well to see if there's stops on this illegal. And that's something I definitely call for. I've made it clear that I want to see that, particularly in the pathways where the illegal dumping has occurred.
That's right.
And, again, if we could somehow put the strong steel cables where the locations where they're backing their dump trucks or whatever to be able to dump those tires, we can somehow thwart that ability for them to get to the river area to be able to dump those. I think that can help us as well, coupled with the cameras. I know Good Earth sent me a video, I think this morning, Mr. Ron Points, and he showed me how they were going about extracting these tires, and it's just unbelievable how many tires were pulling out of the river. And we've got a big, big problem with the illegal dumping. You know, that's something that the Marshal Service, you know, I don't know how much money is going to the Marshal Service, but we need more. We've got to stop this illegal dumping. I'm going to be out with a big group Saturday, as a matter of fact, 4 or 5 hours. We're going to be going after some of these sites and cleaning them up because that's the only way it's going to happen. Will there be any last-minute additional funds for the council to fight over like last year?
We haven't identified anything at this time, but surely we will keep you posted if we do.
That was more of a humorous question than anything. So I know we had so much fun and excitement with that last year. I was teasing. Pardon. I'm finished.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson.
I think I'm bringing up the rear. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to start by saying, at the risk of sounding like Pollyanna or Little Mary Sunshine, I think this is a really good overall budget. I think, AC, that you and your staff listened. We had a lot of input from the public. We had a lot of input from our board and commission members who represent the public. You heard from council members, and you managed to find some funding for the areas that you kept hearing over and over again were really important. More library hours, more rec center hours. I'm happy about more money for traffic signals. It came above the line. I know it wasn't the $10 million that it could have been, but it's at least $4 million, and we're getting a good start on it. I could mention all kinds of other things, animal services. Not everybody got everything they wanted, but everybody got some of what they needed. So I really thank you for listening. I think this is overall a very, very good budget. I did want to just mention a couple of items. Up in my area, which is so far north, we have unique problems with bulk trash pickup. I just got an email this morning. I had put a pilot program in place working with Mr. High to try and see if we couldn't shave some of the time off of bulk trash pickup by us, which is 10 days. So, I've said this before, the trash sits out there for a third of the month every month. The email I got said, I think your pilot program is dead. I think my pilot program is dead, too, and yet we're raising sanitation fees. I understand why we're doing that. We have lots of storm debris we need picked up. You have to put extra crews on. It's overtime. I don't dispute that we need to raise them, but it is hard for me to go to my folks who have very, very poor bulk trash pickup and ask them to pay more in sanitation fees. I would like us to please do something about this. I'm told it's very, very difficult, and I can appreciate that. But we've tackled difficult things here before in the city, and we've made some progress on them. We need to do something about this. And I did want to say that I continue to be frustrated with 311. I know we're putting money into it. I know we're trying to make it better. I know we're talking about technology. But the feedback I get from my folks is it either works great or it doesn't work at all. There doesn't even seem to be any happy medium. And I don't know whether the problem is the call takers or whether the problem is the departmental response once the calls are taken. Something isn't working. And again, I say people either get a great response or they get no response at all. And my husband is an example of no response at all. Three separate calls, and the only response he got was when I complained. So something, and he didn't tell them he was the husband of a council member. He just gave them his name. So I'm thinking that maybe that's the kind of response an average citizen gets, because Jim and I are average citizens, but it wasn't until I spoke up that we got some service. So something is wrong somewhere. I'd like to see process and procedure fix that. I don't know that throwing more money at it and having more bells and whistles on the way people can contact the city is the total answer. Something needs to be fixed there. I agree that I think I'm willing to talk more about staffing. I think that was an issue that came up today that I had mentioned before, and I think we do need to have some more discussion on that. I am not going to be in favor of going back to an effective tax rate, because my feeling about that is that anybody who says that to me, I want to hear how you're going to cut $33 million out of this budget. Don't say to AC, you cut $33 million out of this budget. You tell me how you're going to cut $33 million out of this budget, because I believed that AC and his staff listened to what the public was telling him they wanted to have. And I've seen a lot of that added into this. And I believe in restoring the services that were cut over the lean years. And that's what we're trying to do every single year with our budget. So, you know, those said, I guess I want to say in conclusion to those audience members that are still here, I applaud your endurance. And those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, I heard you did not want to say anything. Okay, thank you very much. You might most favorite, obviously. Couple of comments. First of all, thanks, Gene and AC and team, for making this much clearer. I think this is the first year I've really been able to grasp some of the broad trends because of what you've done. So thanks. Thank you for that. I'll tell you one thing we didn't do, okay, that we need to do at the next budget review is Mr. Griggs' discussion. We need to get FTEs, okay, Marilla and outside Marilla. And we need to be tracking that. That's a metric that we should always be looking at, how many headcount we've got, so we don't have to go into the budget and kind of pick pieces and parts. We should be able to look at that and say, all right, we've decided to increase headcount by 5% or hold it still. So I think that's an important thing we should do. Citizens, I think we have made an important investment in our police and fire officers this year. And I hope we understand the trade-offs that we made. What's the amount again on that one chart? Was that was 18, page 18? Is that our favorite Mr. Kleinman's drain chart? Okay, $24 million, okay? So that was a decision that we have made as a city to say thank you to our police and fire, to make sure we're competitive, as Judge Hill talked about, vis-a-vis the other markets. And with those resources, we continue to fight and drive these numbers down. Thank you also, Chief, for cutting out the $4 million that were non-personnel. That was hard work to do, and I know some people probably didn't like that. But you, to pay Peter, you have to rob Paul sometimes, and I think that's important. Furthermore, in this budget is a major investment in city employees, I see, not only in the headcount issue, but the 3% raise, and I think there's another 2%, what do you call it, marketplace, market adjustment, thank you, and then the investment in the insurance. So city employees, these folks, I think, believe in you, and during hard times, it was difficult, and we came back. I need to ask you, Joe, one question on the libraries. There's been some discussion on that. The libraries have been pushing this $10 million number, okay? What I think I read in this is that we've got... It takes us $6 million to get the hours back that Councilman Medrano was talking about, and that we're spending three of it this year and three of it next year. What is the other $4 million? And did I read it right?
Absolutely, you're correct in that. And the additional $4 million is for items that have never been supported by the city before. It's additional programming and services that the Friends of the Library support now, and we depend on grants and corporate donations for. And they're items that we would like to see continued. That right now, they're sometimes we can't always count on the money to come through.
Did we ever, as a city, did we ever spend that $4 million?
No.
Okay, so it's in case the private sector pulls out.
Right, it's enhancing programs.
Because everybody's been using this $10 million number. I've used it.
Yeah.
And I just want to understand where it came from.
It's for enhancing programs, and it's to increase our services.
Okay, but if we accomplish the $6 million, this three and next year's three, we will get back to the hours we were in 08.
We'll surpass them.
We'll surpass them. Okay. So no one cannot say we didn't.
Right.
Okay. I'd like to see it. You know, I'd like to see it this year. Okay.
I know you would.
But you know, at least if we're committed to getting it solved by next year. Thank you for answering that.
Absolutely.
Two things that to me are pretty macro issues that we have got to kind of figure out, and I backed off from them. One is the whole issue of technology. As I look at productivity in any organization, private or public, technology has got to be the enabler to do that. A good example of that, to me, is cameras, okay, at the police, in the police world. I see so little investment. I've talked to the city manager about this, so I'm not surprising him. And I see this year as a key year for us to struggle with really what we need to do from a technology standpoint so we're not having to hire human beings at the rate that we have to when we start to grow. We can have technology as a multiplier effect. One of the things, I'm just going to be very clear about it for me, that I'm going to be harder and harder on, is clarifying the metrics and getting metrics from the departments. I've asked for metrics on
job without some sort of goal.
On that, on our housing or in blight areas, how much, you know, who owns the houses, how bad are the houses, and how many houses have we dealt with, and we can't get that information. And there's some place in this organization on a piece of paper underneath somebody's desk, and we just can't, I think, as an organization, run our business that way. We've got to make sure each department, whether it's usage in rec centers or swimming pools or fair park or animal control, we've got to be much crisper on that issue. So that's one of the things I'm going to be pushing for. The other thing is the briefing we're going to get here in the next couple of weeks, and that is the biggest issue I think we face as a city is this gap between the haves and the have-nots and how many people that are in poverty and what we're doing about that. I appreciate us doubling the income tax credit, but that's probably a little, drop in the bucket, if you will. I hope we start to wrestle with that issue. And I want to, first of all, there's a moral issue, but more importantly, or as importantly, there's a business issue here, too, that we've got to get these people contributing and being driving our sales tax. And with this big gap issue, it's just tough as a community. I want to say thank you to the senior council members that have been here. This is their sixth budget, okay? And eight. I thought so. And what you guys did in that first, couple of years was tough, okay? With that budget declining, and hopefully we learned from you. I'm kind of a fan with this rainy day thing. 30 days is not a rainy day. That's a cash flow issue. Okay, I'd love to be able to take that $4 million and turn it into, you know, a $40 million nest egg to be able to have. I think it's just good fiscal discipline. That's something that I think we've got to continue to talk about. I guess the question to me, since you guys went through that, is it's natural, probably unacceptable, but it's still natural when good times come that, as Mr. Kingston said, this creep starts to happen. And I think it is. There's no question. It's just in every department. I'm not arguing with you, Warren, but, you know, we need five versus, you know, two. And it's the money's there so we can justify it. And the question is, how do we empower you guys to do the job you need to do and at the same time be strategic? And I was very frustrated by this process because I didn't feel like we wrestled down some of the big issues early in the budget process. And it is. It's just kind of the same budget, and it was just kind of incrementally done here and here. So one idea I'm going to throw out that we can all think about is for the next budget, which I think we start in January or February, right? Okay. I want to use this budget as the stalking horse. And I want us to kind of just say we're free to kind of rip it apart and do whatever you want and almost do this as opposed to you waiting to kind of finish the thing. And now we kind of just, you know, we always seem to go around the edges. And so if we've got some issues with this budget and you don't, you're in a minority position, okay, let's use that as a real a stalking horse to build it, a straw man to build the next year's budget. And don't come and ask for more money unless we know where we're going to take it from. Okay, it's just good fiscal discipline. Okay, we've got, and just to say we've got to be more efficient, it's like, let's just cut the departments next year. Just say, look, this is the department, well, this is all the money we're going to give. As opposed to saying, AC, you need to be more efficient, because they're not going to be, it's human nature. They're going to spend whatever money we give them. I mean, it's not a, I'm not blaming anybody. It's management wants to do a better job, and that's what they do. So we've got to be the, and Mr. Kleiman, you kind of are paying a little bit, but I appreciate you. I appreciate you saying some of those things to holding us, you know, accountable. And let's use this next year to do that. Moving forward, Council, thank you for going out to getting these public meetings, getting the input, and bringing it back. I will say I apologize to citizens that I will not be showing up in each district this year. I've got a little surgery I'm doing Thursday, so I'm not going to be out there. I will be on a couple of the phone calls, and I'll be doing that, but I apologize. Bring the information back. We've got another meeting on the 20th, okay? I'd like to get all the work done on the 20th so we don't have to have another one on the 26th. Here's my suggestion. Bring amendments on the 20th. So if you see something that needs to be changed and you want to either cut the budget or and put it in a rainy day fund or cut the budget and spend it on something else, bring actively on that. You'll still be learning from the public, and it'll be a dynamic thing, but let's do that. Also, try to get you 700 other votes, okay, at the same time. So, you know, because the way we'll work it, I'm just saying theoretically, as you look around the table, say, is this something that everybody's going to vote on and like? Or is this something that somebody is going to just kind of do a one-off? And if you say, I'm doing something that we've got a lot of appetite for, bring it. Let's talk about it and let's get it going so we can kind of bring this thing to a head. A lot of hard work. This is a process. We've got to I hope you heard me, Mr. Gonzalez, that creep is not good. Productivity is. And we're expecting you to spend every dollar show us and demonstrate with metrics how we are more productive, whether it's on the weight of people. We are the fattest city hall, okay, in the nation or something I saw. It's ridiculous, okay? Or if it's around code or whether it's around bulky trash pickup, we've got to get better at looking at this thing so the facts speak for themselves, all right? Thank you very much, team. I appreciate it, and we'll see you tomorrow at City Council. Meeting is adjourned.